the Starship, Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlantis, right here on 720 WGN.
You were right, Ro. They've got the 999 million as the jackpot in the little digital sign downstairs at the Mini Mart, even though it's crossed the $1 billion marker.
Yes. And it only had three digits. And I think it just does number digits. It won't do like a, it would be if it said one Bill Mill.
One B? Yes. I could understand that.
You know, then I would go one Bill Mill. That would be quintillion, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Which I'd take that. That'd be good. I'd like that. Yeah. Maybe king of the world. Mm-hmm. No problem. But you were down there. Now you were down there.
I was down there. Kevin was down there too. So I feel like everyone's got a little side deal going.
See, now we isn't all that funny?
Pot, you know,
that is really funny because I had just been down there.
And did you get one?
And I got some.
Got some for yourself.
I got some for myself.
Okay, I got two for myself. And then I saw Kevin coming out of there looking like he had gotten something
like he'd
for
gotten
himself.
An entire paycheck's worth down there.
Yeah, he was counting a lot of cash.
I need to move back into my bedroom for a while.
I get an advance on my allowance.
I put all of my paycheck down on the lotto. Does that make sense?
And I cashed out my Bitcoin to throw it all on this.
It's probably better to cash it out of Bitcoin.
Yeah. I think if it's since it has moved over $200 million on this, my guess is that most of the numbers are covered now. And that tells you there's going to be
a winner.
There's probably
going
to be a winner here.
Yeah, they've got all kinds of people lining up, and you know, they're talking about the pressure on the people selling them, that they've got the lines, and they're trying to move people along.
Although our guy, and I don't want to give this away because I don't want to get flooded.
He's a machine down there.
Yeah,
he's fast.
He's working between that, and our building is not, you know, either you're working in this building, there's not a lot of passersby, and you have to find him, too. Because he's not like on the front level, you know, on the first level of the building.
No,
you got to go find him. And I'm not gonna give any more, you know, if people, you know, would like, you know, nuts or those like corn nuts or whatever it is.
He's got a great candy selection.
Yes.
Like the kinds that are in like the like you don't see the everyday kind of things, like
and
the $100,000 bars.
So many different ramen flavors, things I've never even knew existed.
Yeah, he does. He has the most. The best procured and
curated.
That's what I'm looking
Bears
for.
Mm-hmm.
He has the best curated convenience store I have ever seen.
Totally. It's all the stuff you want when you're hungry.
No.
Mr. Patel.
Yes.
Mr. Goodbar. I love those, but you never see
him. We should call him Mr. Goodbar, is what we should call him.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what we should
We'll have
do.
To have him on when we win.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, don't, trust me, because he wins too.
He totally wins.
Yeah.
What do they get?
They don't get as much as you think.
No, it has never worked out.
Is it always
out.
Just a percentage of the
No,
amount?
I think it's like a straight number. We should call him and ask him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he knows.
He's listening on his phone right now,
yes,
I hope.
He is.
Because he does listen on his phone and then people come in and complain.
I think they were only complaining because I was on.
Yeah, that's probably true. But still.
On the last one, the $543 million jackpot, the store owner got $1 million.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So when it's this high, I guess it's real dough.
So is it just $1 million straight for these guys?
That's about what he got. No, it isn't straight. It's a percentage of the jackpot.
Oh, so is he going to get a couple $1 million?
Could be.
Oh. I wonder if Christopher Cross.
I mean, we're going to get a billion, and he's going to get a couple million. So, I mean, that seems right.
Work out nicely for everyone.
You think he's going to close down shop?
No, he'll stay for us. He's dedicated to the cause.
Yeah. Oh, for us? Like, we're going to be here. He'll never see us again. It's going to be like, we're going to read that thing, and it's going to be all over. All over.
Out of here.
All right. In 1 hour in Texas, they sold $2 million worth of lottery tickets.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. This is going to be
If it's not a winner, this thing goes to... Well, the biggest one ever was $1.6 billion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that
right?
This is the second largest
jackpot ever. This is the largest Mega Millions ever.
Whoa. It's a lot of cheddar.
And a bill, if it doesn't go tonight...
Oh, gosh. It'll become the largest, they believe... Because then it just starts to be a frenzy, if it isn't already.
It's kind of a frenzy.
Because
everybody was down there, and it wasn't, you know, again, it's very, very, very polite down there. You know, it's well curated. It's kind of a, you know, it's a fancy.
It is kind of fancy. Very clean.
Store. Yeah.
And the outside's all wooden. It's like oak down there.
Yeah. It's kind of, so he seems to have the thing. It's like a country club more than it is anything else.
It is.
And so everybody was very kind. You know, you don't have these people like down the block. you know, people are outside there. It almost looks like a run on a store.
Like the state of Illinois building looks like chaos there, where everyone gets off the L and you see the line that went out the door at one point.
Man, our guy's not far. We shouldn't be given, maybe we should for help him out a little bit. But our dude, it's not that crowded down there every time I go.
No.
I mean, you could pretty much go up and just get as many tickets as you want.
And corn nuts.
And corn nuts. And he's got flavored Doritos you never even heard
That's
of.
So
like, where did
true.
This come from? And I try them. It's wonderful.
And the Cheetos.
And Cheetos seems on sale, too. I'm like, more? I need more? Because you need a minimum for the credit card. So I'm like, just throwing chips on. I'm like, yeah.
Pesto? Pesto Doritos?
I know. It's like, who heard of
that? All right. Anyway, well, we wish him all the luck as long as we win. If anybody else wins in this building, then we do not wish him any luck. Still can't quite figure that out.
No. Ro, would you run for president if you became a billionaire? Texter wants to know.
Yes.
Okay. That's what you do these days.
A few things, because quite honestly, I think a fight between me and Trump would be like a fist fight between me and Trump would be kind of fun.
A slapping fight.
Yeah. That's what it would be. Because it would be two patrician kids who grew up going to private schools, then, you know, trying to out-tough each other. That's what it would be.
And you're both
put them
tall,
up. Put them up.
Right.
You know, you're both tall. It looks like you could.
Yeah, we're about
fight,
to say. Yeah. About, yeah.
You both have good hair.
Yeah. Well,
oh,
yeah.
That was low.
No, I'm serious. Soon.
One person has good hair.
Ro, you know where your money lies. It's your hair.
Thanks.
Yeah, Ro has good hair. What do you think Trump has good hair?
Well, he pays a lot of attention to it. So it's sort of
known
like
for
that.
His hair.
He's
got, yeah. Like myself, known for hair.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
That's it. That's about it. When people go, "Oh, he is a talk show host. He has great hair." That's what they like to say about me.
The guy with the hair? Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I think the best hair in talk radio. Quite honestly, I mean, you know, I think Hannity fights that he has it.
Yes,
but Hannity looks like a Ken doll. You know,
the part is too severe.
Yeah, it's an awkward angle. His part.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down a little
problem.
Too aggressive.
Yeah, it's right. Well,
maybe bring it back a little bit with some.
Yeah, flow. I know. I mean that aggressive part in the hair. You know there was one other guy in history had a really aggressive part in his hair too.
Wow,
it was
that's a good point.
Yeah, don't go for the aggressive part. Let it just flow, baby. Let it just flow.
That's right.
All right. Do you mind if we move along here to find out what Kim is working on in the newsroom, and then Ben Bradley is going to join us. We have details now on why that guy got arrested on terrorism charges on the north side of Chicago. It's a pretty interesting story. But first, Kim.
Roe will tell you what Attorney General Jeff Sessions thinks about the proposed consent decree in Chicago.
Then there's this. Deck Party. Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago, 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
Yeah!
Maybe we should invite Ben Bradley to one of the deck parties that we rarely have because you don't like everybody in your house.
I love a good deck party.
It's so funny because Ben is always trying to send me pictures of his deck, and it's such a thing.
Is it as nice as yours?
It's bigger. It's bigger actually because he's got, you know, he lives in the suburbs, so he gets more. There's more.
Everything's
space.
Better in the suburbs.
Yeah.
Just remember that.
That's just why I just want to make that point.
I also don't have to have three gates around my place like yours. Although, Ro, you installed two of them, right?
Yes, I did. I have actually a gate just to protect myself inside my gate,
and it's electrified
to keep myself
too.
From getting into my own gate. Yeah. But no joke,
Ro has probably the highest gate in the city. You know, a lot of people just have those kind of, you know, three-quarter gates in front of their place.
That's true.
Ro's goes above your head.
It looks like Graceland.
Right.
To enter into my lair, you have to go. It's true. That is true. It's weird. I live right downtown, and I have it. It's weird. So now you basically have given away when people drive by a gate and go, is that like Graceland? It's my place.
You know, that's where you live.
That's the whole thing.
And then they see the nice deck through the gate, and they know,
that's it. Oh, isn't that an architect deck? All right, well, let's talk about this guy up on the north side who got arrested for cooperating. I'll explain it.
Well, it's conspiracy to support a terrorist organization. His name is Ashraf Al-Safu. He's 34 years old, a naturalized U.S. citizen. He was actually born in Mosul, Iraq. He moved to the U.S. In 2008. And what the feds allege the Chicagoan did was essentially worked as a propagandist for ISIS in Iraq and had some success at it. You know, he would not only disseminate, allegedly, some of the terrorist organizations' highlight videos, if you will, but he would also write some of them and do some of the writing that was meant to recruit others, both in the online world and in the real world, to support ISIS and its mission. In the charging document, among the quotes attributed to this Chicagoan, one of the things that he wrote on the internet, allegedly, it says, "Participate in the war, spread fear. The state ISIS does not want you to watch it only. It incites you, and if it fails to do so, use it to incite others." Now, you might say, well, you know, what is it? This guy's just posting stuff online. Is that really a crime? Does this really matter? Let's not forget that Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and other terrorist organizations have had an incredible amount of success, not only overseas, but recruiting lone wolf terrorists here in the United States. Yeah. And oftentimes it happens...
The Orlando shooter.
Exactly, via computer, watching these videos online, getting in touch, putting two people in touch in these private chat rooms and inciting others to commit violence. The feds say that's exactly what this Chicagoan was doing.
Wow.
When you say videos, Ben, are these kind of the videos we become acquainted with through ISIS, with the violence showing, like sort of boasting about the horrifying things they've done to others? Or are these more like recruitment videos that show the glamorous life of a terrorist or something? Or do you even know?
Well, it's meant to... The charging document included some imagery. Almost we would think of them as social media badges, right? Like little graphics that, you know, incite people. You know, one included the Magic Kingdom, Disney World. It had a Christmas tree and had a family around a Christmas tree. And then in the foreground was a guy, you know, holding some type of control device, looking like he was about, you know, to push the plunger there, presumably, you know, to set off a bomb. That type of imagery is what was included in this document. But Anna, to your point, you're right. ISIS and other terrorist organizations have used all sorts of types of video and social media to recruit folks over the years.
So do you have a sense, if he's convicted of this, what kind of a jail sentence is that?
So if he's convicted, it's a max of 20 years. So this is conspiracy. This is a conspiracy charge, conspiracy to support a terrorist organization.
Okay. All right. Wow.
Yeah.
And in Chicago, I mean, we should not fail to mention that Chicago has been very, very good and also a little lucky in terms of catching people who tried to do things here along the way. You had that Padilla guy.
Jose Padilla, the dirty bomber. Remember, who was a gang member connected to Al-Qaeda, was going to set off a dirty bomb.
And you also had a couple of different plots, one outside Wrigley Field, another outside a bar in the South Loop. These were guys who were talking about, you know, their interest in setting off some type of explosive device and their, you know, support for these terrorist organizations. Thankfully, you know, in all these cases, the FBI has intercepted them early and in some cases inserted an undercover agent or got a cooperating informant in there, and they were able to, you know, take the plot far enough along to where the guy shows intent, right? This is more than just talk. In some cases,
hit the plunger or whatever.
Yeah, gave them a dummy device to see if they would actually do it.
And there's, you know, then civil libertarians always argue about that. Were they enticed? Were they, you know, forced into it by the government? But there's a couple of other cases. You had the Mumbai, as people will recall, that those guys who came literally offshore, like on little boats, Mumbai's on the water, on the ocean, and they got out of the boats and they went. They attacked these hotels, the Taj Hotel. That was partially organized and funded through a guy who lived in northern Illinois. He was doing it out of a farm down in, it was either Will County or LaSalle County. I can't remember. It was down there. But he also had businesses on Devon Avenue in Chicago.
Right.
That he was working out of. And then the FBI, in one of the greatest thwarts of an attack ever, was there was a guy who was the crazy bomb architect from Yemen. Had created these printer cartridge bombs and was trying to send them to Chicago to what he thought was he was going to detonate an aircraft over, like, you know, one of those transport aircraft that, you know, brings packages in solely
cargo
on their way into O'Hare at a certain level. And they were hoping to rain you know, that the you know the that, that aircraft, yep. that debris over the northwest side of Chicago, and that was thwarted by the Chicago office here, the FBI, in what there should be a movie made about how they did that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was a crazy, crazy thwarting of that.
Yep.
And the, you know, so the Chicago's been at the epicenter of this. So when we stop and think, well, it's New York or it's other things, it's,
absolutely,
you know, we're right
not.
In the middle of it as well.
So Joint Terrorism Task Force operates out of Chicago, and it's a great group of agents and Chicago police officers and others.
Mm. All right. Well, we will see you on the WGN-TV News at 4, 5.
Just 4 o'clock today.
Okay.
Mercifully, I'm being paroled early for the weekend.
There's one man who needs it. Is there one man who will one day need parole? It is Ben Bradley.
Oh.
And he and I, right behind, the two of us together.
We'll Let's go, hope we're not cellies,
we'll,
bro.
Right,
that
exactly.
would not
we'll go
over
No,
well.
It's, it, we know each other too well to be cellmates.
It would be the cleanest cell in the place,
yes,
though, I can tell you that.
You'd have that going for
you. We would definitely be the people that were entertaining on the cell block. We'll come over to Ben and Rose. All right, thank you.
Yep.
All right,
bye,
right
Ben.
Now, we've got, let's see, what do we have here? We've got Kim Gordon standing by with the WGN News, being brought to you by AppleChevy.com.
Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Oh, Susie Q. Baby, I love you. Susie Q.
From Concho with Anna DeBlanzas,
yes,
right here on 720 WGN. It's the triumphant return of Susan Schmidt now in the studio because,
yes,
she can do this now. Head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors, mm-hmm, which that office is based here in Chicago, and you're running that deal. So congratulations to you on that.
Why, thank you.
First question that I think everybody is asking, because the big political story today is that Steven Mnuchin has decided not to go to Davos in the desert. Now, that sounds like a very complicated thing, but basically, this Davos in the Desert is an investor conference that Saudi Arabia is holding, right?
Right.
And they were inviting all these people from around the world, like the Davos thing, which happens in Switzerland, which is a gigantic investors conference, right?
Exactly.
And so now they want to do a similar kind of thing in the kingdom. And a bunch of people are backing out because they don't want to be a piece of this.
Good choice of words.
Yeah.
Yes. So that is very true. So we have Davos in the desert. So it was meant to be a meeting, a grouping of world leaders of business, and large corporation CEOs were planning on going. But given the recent controversy and the political turmoil around Saudi Arabia right now, a lot of people have backed off from that. So the latest, we saw several prominent CEOs declare that they weren't going to be going, changing their mind earlier this week. And then the last announcement we had is from Steve Mnuchin.
When we talk about Saudi Arabia, and there seem to be so many conversations right now about human rights versus the economic ties to Saudi Arabia and who values which the most. And this is sort of a test of that. But explain for us a little bit, Susan, you know, there is a real economic relationship with Saudi Arabia, from U.S. treasuries to the kinds of things you've talked about before on this program, the investment in our companies and oil and those types. Talk about how the impact of their investment here.
Well, remember that Saudi Arabia is a tremendous source of wealth. Obviously, when we think of them, historically, we think of them in terms of oil and the oil that all the riches that is brought to their country. It is a kingdom. We don't know, as Americans, we're not incredibly aware of how they run their internal kingdom and how the different social levels exist within the kingdom. But we do know that overall, they've got a lot of money. They have giant sovereign wealth funds that want and are looking for investments around the world. And that includes real estate. It includes stocks. It includes being active in our stock markets. And so it also, you know, involves a lot of diplomatic relations, because Saudi then also is a very large buyer of products that our big corporations make, like planes and defense equipment, missiles, that kind of thing. So it becomes a strong economic trading partner. You want to have, it's always nice to have a wealthy client, right? A wealthy customer buying your goods. And so that's what many of our businesses have with Saudi Arabia. The turmoil over this becomes that of political tension. What kind of relationship do we have going forward? And it does make people a little bit nervous. The Saudis, through the sovereign wealth funds that they have, which many Middle Eastern countries have, this is not strictly exclusive to the Saudis, but those sovereign wealth funds, think giant pools of investment, are, you know, situated around. I'm not worried about those
fleeing or disappearing. They're going after a return in the most viable investments they can find. That's going to stay wherever they are.
Theoretically, still be the United States.
Theoretically, it's still. They're looking for the hot investments. They're not going to give up on a company that they've invested in. You know, they might be involved in large VC startups. We think about startup companies in Silicon Valley. You hear these big names, whether they've gone public yet or not. These might be private investments that the kingdom and their sovereign wealth funds have put in. I don't think those are going to flee. I do think it strains our relationship from a business perspective in terms of, does the government allow another sale of defense equipment to Saudi Arabia?
And the other piece of this defense thing, which is important, is that that money had not been transferred. That these are this is all theoretical, that there's $100 billion in defense spending that the Saudis are going to do with American companies.
Right. Now, that's all future spend. So none of that has...
The money has not transferred.
The money has not transferred.
And those planes and other weapon systems have not come off.
They've not been delivered. They're not there. So all of that, we talk about
But they want them, though. I mean, but I don't want to minimize this, that you know, Lockheed and potentially Boeing in the future and other big American companies that do this, they want this business.
Well, clearly they do. It's good business. How many entities do you know that can buy, you know, a lot of...
I'm going to promise you this. After I win the Mega Millions,
yeah,
I'm buying a fighter jet. I'm going to buy a fighter jet.
There aren't many entities.
One thing to do.
Exactly. There aren't many entities. He's just going to take
it. I'm out of horse racing. I want to be in the fighter jet.
He's going to take it for a spin around the lake. There aren't many entities that can do that. So, of course, you want them as customers. And they have infrastructure in the equipment that they've already bought from us that's predicated on our, you know, U.S. operating systems. So what we're doing is adding on to their existing defense infrastructure. It's very hard for them to shift right now and switch systems and go to, say, a Russian system, which operates in, right, it's like Legos. It's a different set of components.
They
don't block together the same way.
Okay, so I guess, you know, the real question here is really for the king of Saudi Arabia, if you can remember the question once it's asked.
It's really for the crown prince because he's got the control.
No, because for the king, does the king move the crown prince out of the way here?
No.
Because he's already created trouble. Do you don't think so?
I don't. It's very hard to see how
new crown prince.
Well, I'm going to be. This is
there isn't
purely,
an Eric. That's like the number two.
No, there isn't an Eric.
We got Don Jr. moving to Eric.
Tiffany, maybe Crown Princess Tiffany.
No, we have not seen a number two designated. So the existing crown prince and the king are very close. The king went to great lengths to have his son installed as the crown prince. And I think that what they're going to have to do is work it out together, because the crown prince is seen as, and as is typical, that position is the heir apparent to the king. And so I think it's going to be a decision that they need to make together for joint governance, because you're going to eventually have this transition of power in this large kingdom that is dependent on the monarchy and rule holding control throughout. So I don't think that the king is going to put aside his son to do this. I think instead what they'll have to do is figure out, I think they're very sensible economically. I think what they're trying to do is create, you know, Davos in the desert is not because Saudi wants to show off that they have oil reserves. What they want to do is show how competent they are at many things. They're not just
an energy
country.
But this sends a real signal, though, that Mnuchin's not going. This is a pretty strong signal from the White House and the administration that you know, for the next 5 minutes, we're going to take this seriously.
I think that's very true. I think that this is a final. Remember that we didn't get the signal that Mnuchin wasn't going until late this week. Other business CEOs had already said, we're out, not going to do that, we're withdrawing, thanks, we'll catch it again in maybe some other year.
And the Washington Post is reporting that Mnuchin is still going to Saudi Arabia to meet for some other meetings and anti-terrorist meetings, but he's just not going to the Davos in the desert.
Is his wife going to Davos in the desert?
Well, I hope
so. Should wear white gloves?
Because we'll know by looking at Instagram.
Oh,
this is true. This is true. She will let us know.
Maybe she can hold up a instead of a sheet of money like she did there, maybe she can hold up gold and she can hold the orb. Right, and maybe like an oil can. That'd be good for her.
That'd be great.
Yeah, wearing the white glove. I don't know.
Little mini gold replica
maybe,
of an oil.
Maybe the head of a dissident. I don't know. Whatever they give her to hold on to. All right. Let's talk about this 30th anniversary of Black Monday. And you know, it seems like the fall is always when there's, you know, whether it was the, you know, the crash of 1929 or Black Monday 30 years ago, 1988. What is the, I forgot what year it was for a second. What was the relationship between fall and market volatility?
Well,
or are we just making that up?
I think you're, I think statistically we could say that there are a lot of falls that, seasons that have come and gone without extreme market volatility. We do see a resumption of market activity because remember, in the U.S., it's very typical that a lot of people look at the summer months as holiday. They take time off, particularly in August, which is the slowest month for the market. Right. We see the least
European
amount of volume.
European investors are quiet then.
Most definitely. And so we see that pick up as we come back into September. And then it's not just, you know, the stock markets, our entire economy. People think about it. You think about the summer, you think about taking vacation, you step back a little bit. Fall, school starts, businesses are back in action. Right now, the Wall Street is back and focused. They're out visiting companies. We have a lot of industry conferences happening, and we're in the middle of earnings season. So right now, CEOs are reporting, telling us how their companies did and what they see going forward.
To that point, how are we doing?
Yeah, you said watch that space. So what are we seeing?
Ups and downs. So it's good, fair to moderate. I don't want to say it's terrific. It's early on yet. Next week is going to be the thick of it. We'll really get the bulk of earnings happening for the S&P 500 happen in the next week, and that's going to be the busiest week of this season for us. We're going to hear CEOs talk about how they're feeling about the economy. We've heard some of them talk about things going well. We've heard some of them talk about concerns over costs and that costs are rising and they're dealing with it, but it's cutting into profitability.
And so today, the Dow, you know, up just a little bit, 65 points, essentially. But down, you know, what, 1,800 from its high, something like that?
Yeah, we're flat on the week. Now, I think what's interesting this week is we saw a lot of volatility. So remember last week we had 2 days we thought the world was ending. We got here on Monday, Tuesday, things were great. Everything's fine, and we were bouncing back up. So we have had some days here with some big up and down moves. We are well off the highs. Mm-hmm. We are, I think, now focused in on data that's being released by businesses. So we're back to looking at facts. And so facts and figures are a good reality check for the market. And we're seeing that I think investors are really engaging and looking at. We had Fed minutes released this week as well. They're looking at, you know, the future and trying to figure out how's the economy faring? What are interest rates going to do? How are we handling this? What's the world impact? Those global exogenous events, when they hit you out of nowhere, those can impact the market. We do have shock value in those and knee-jerk reactions. So that's, you know, what we're seeing right now is volatility and some emotion. Remember that we haven't seen a real pullback in this market for a very, very long time. It's crazy.
A decade, essentially.
Essentially.
I mean, since the bottom, it's been at different points
just,
slower
right.
or faster growth. I mean,
we've
obviously
had a
since
few moments
Trump,
where we've had a retrenchment in pricing, but they haven't lasted very long. And so everyone knows that this has been a great, long-lasting, slow, relatively steady upward recovery, and everybody is looking over their shoulder wondering
right.
when is it going to catch
When's
up with us?
When's the party going to end?
Exactly. The shoe's got to drop here. When is it happening? And they don't want to be the last man standing.
Since you're here and you know a lot about finance, we need some advice because when we win the $1 billion, do you have any sort
right.
of advice for us or whoever might win, Susan?
Well, I would say it's important to really consider what you want. I wouldn't rush out to buy fighter jets. I don't think that's a good idea.
Sorry, Ro.
But
now, should I invest in racehorses?
If you don't have a pilot's license. And no,
yeah.
You
don't know
can
that.
You buy one of those?
You don't know that. I get one of those on the internet.
So this is true, I'm sure. So I don't.
How hard could it be to fly a fighter jet? Really,
right.
Seriously.
Years
I'm really
of training
good on flight
in the military,
simulator.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
I was able to land the shuttle at NASA when I went to the visitor center area there.
Yeah, see?
Oh, see?
I actually
there.
Did take control of an F-16 in the middle of the air. But
what?
Only yes, I did
for
the Thunderbirds. At one point, the guy let me have the stick, and it literally 3 seconds later goes, "All right, I'll take it back from you now." So I do have related experience.
Okay, mm-hmm. 3 seconds at a time.
Three
okay.
seconds.
So you'd take a breather. What would you do?
Well, all right. So if you get $1 billion, one, you should be ecstatic and happy. Two, call a lawyer, because there are a lot of tax implications to that. So before you do anything, call a lawyer and understand what the tax implications are before you declare ownership of this. Then you can start to think about a long-term investment plan, and it all depends on what you want to achieve with that and how you want to invest, how philanthropic you are feeling, and what you like. Over time.
Yeah, whatever. I'll get to you.
I know, he wants the fighter jet.
Can't you just put your money in an interest-bearing account?
Can I be Goose and ride shotgun?
What about cryptocurrency?
You know what
is that still
to Goose,
a good investment?
Right?
Too many questions.
Goose had a good run.
Actually, if you flew with me, you'd be Goose. It's the exact same thing.
Get Goose.
Yeah, cryptocurrencies, again, with the crypto. Kevin, have you looked at the cryptocurrency lately?
I want to go. Yeah, don't bring that up to him.
He's very much in the
next one. I lost all my money!
I'm leaning on the lotto.
I know, now it's just lottery tickets. I think I might have said something about that at one point or another.
Yeah, but the interest-bearing accounts, actually, you know, it's funny because Violetta has hit on something here, because
interest
rates are going up.
Interest rates matter. So Violetta, good job. That's much better than Bitcoin right now. And it's much better than having a 0% interest rates now with $1 billion.
What are you at now?
With $1 billion, I'm sure they'll give you a special rate. But you could lock that up in a CD and get 2% or more off of it on a 12 month CD, no problem.
How about that?
I could live off that.
How about that? 2% of $1 billion. What is that? That's like $50 trillion? How much is that?
No risk involved. You'd be just fine. So 20 million a year, I think you could handle that. That'd be all very good.
Sure.
So I think all of that is it's all something that I think would be if you want to take the risk-averse approach and you don't want to put any capital at risk. But I don't know, Violetta, how much do you think you're going to spend a year? 20 million or more?
I could if I need to.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you go. So that's certainly possible. But that does become an option, because there are interest rates. You get paid on your savings.
Two words, right. Potcoin.
Potcoin. Yeah.
Ha! Oh, no.
Okay, thank you, Susie Sunshine. Susan Schmidt, head of U.S. Equities at Aviva Investors right here in Chicago. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Susan.
For what you have done.
My pleasure.
I'm very sorry for what the kids did. Anna and I never like when they come down to the kitchen in the middle of this segment. All right, we've got coming up in just a moment here, we've got Kim Gordon, WGN News, top of the hour. What's coming up?
The Mega Millions has turned into a billion, and everyone's trying to get rich tonight.
Stepping into the studio, Congressman Peter Roskam. He is seeing a lot of ads here. It's one of the contested races, not only in Illinois, but around the nation. They're looking at this race because the congressman who now, how many, just remind me now, how many terms have you been serving?
I'm in my sixth term now.
Sixth term.
Wow.
So it's a dozen years. Essentially, right, that you have been in Congress, mm-hmm. a very respected congressman from the western northwest suburbs, right, and done a lot, and now the fight is on because the Republican Party is not quite sure what it wants to be. What does it take to win as a Republican congressman in this current Republican Party when you're from Illinois and Donald Trump and the Trump ism is not very popular here?
So here's the sort of state of play. First of all, thanks for having me in. This is such a cool space, but that as it may. So here's the state of play. I was in a similar situation back in 2006. My first opponent was Tammy Duckworth, who is a phenomenon based on her experience and her sacrifice. Mm-hmm. George W. Bush was not popular in 2006, and the war in Iraq was not popular. And so I come walking into that scene, and it was a game on deal. Millions of dollars, big national race, a lot of stuff. Now, this is different in that Donald Trump's personality is significant, and it's having an influence.
But that was a de-energized Republican Party in 2006. This is an energized Republican Party, but it is split. There's an internecine fight between Republicans about whether you're going to be a you're a loser or you're with Donald Trump. I mean, that's kind of the way it's been portrayed by him.
What I've done is tried to navigate through and be a part of trying to bring people together and to say, look, there's really no percentage in fighting, and there is a big percentage in working together. Yeah, that's right. And so the tax cuts, I was very, very active in that debate, feel very strongly that that's been transformational for our country. It's been incredibly helpful for the district that I represent, $1 billion in tax relief. The World Economic Forum just this week said that the U.S. economy was rated number one in the world for the first time in 10 years as the most competitive jurisdiction around. So that's what we want. But how you
do that,
in terms of business,
right,
the reflowing of capital into the U.S. and so forth. And you can just feel it. I mean, the unemployment rate, a low down, you know, in 45 or 50 years and all of those sort of statistics, and they bear out. But in order to get that done, you've got to be talking to people, and you can't be talking past one another. And I think what I've observed in politics is sort of sometimes bumper stickers just take over common sense and an inability to sit down and listen to one another. And if you sit down and listen to one another and you try and develop a little bit of a consensus, whether it's within a party or across party lines, because you got to do both things in order to move forward, then I think that's what this district is longing for. I'm convinced of it. The more, and here's the proof of that. I do a lot of events all across my constituency, as you can imagine, in with small groups and in companies and nonprofits and all these different settings. 9 times out of 10, the first hand that goes up in a Q&A session is, hey, how come everybody can't work things out? And there's a longing for that, I sense.
Yeah, I think that's true. What about the tariffs, though? The Trump administration's tariffs harming some of the people, the businesses in your district. What do we do about those? Are you in favor of what we're doing right now? You propose some changes?
The tariffs are a big concern of mine. And I think that Donald Trump is a mercantilist. He really does believe that if you raise tariffs, that you're going to create more economic activity within the country. That is not good for Chicagoland, by and large. We're a trading region. We're a trading constituency. When tariffs are low, we do better, just without question. Now, the president is trying to drive a trade agenda. Here's what I hope happens. And I've been critical of how they've approached it. Here's what I hope happens. I hope that the Mexican and Canadian deal is as good as the administration says it is. Right now, we don't know. We don't know all the details of it. I hope it's as good as they say it is. The second thing is, we want Europe to be reconciled with the United States quickly and to have a good trade deal with the Europeans quickly. And there's a foreshadowing that that's possible because they came over 6 weeks ago and said, we want to make a trade deal. Then all the attention really does need to turn to China. China's been cheating. They've been cheating on intellectual property. They've been cheating on currency. They've been cheating on local content rules, the limitations right. of U.S. and so forth.
And we've put up with it because they're spending so much money on us.
That's right. And so
although the president denies that in his own way, and that's the thing that I think a lot of people who are, and you don't have to have a real high level of economic sophistication to realize this, but that they're a big market for the United States.
Right. We're of two minds when it comes to China. On the one hand, we're threatened by them in some ways. And on the other hand, there's 1 billion plus people and we want to sell into that marketplace. Right. Look, there's a distinction, I think, in how we interact with China as to how we've interacted, for example, with the Soviet Union. Remember, Ronald Reagan came in with the Soviet Union and he said to his national security team in the early part of his administration, new plan. We win, they lose. Help me do that. That's not what we want with China. We don't want China to, quote, lose.
Right.
And in fact,
we had no economic interest in the Soviet Union. We had a fear of military conflict.
And that's right.
We wanted to break their military, which we
did.
That's
right.
This is, to your point, very important point, very different. However, the reality is that by forcing China's hand, China doesn't look at this as a 4 or 6 year proposition for them. They look at this as a 40 to 60, and in some cases, 400 to 600 year, right? That's they play the long game. They will outweigh Donald Trump.
I think that's right. So there's a couple of other things that we need to keep in mind. One is, we're not trying to push China out of the day in the sun, but what we would hope is that China grows in terms of rule of law and all these things, which would be good for us to have a big dynamic economy. We want China to flourish. We want their middle class to grow, to have more of an impact that we can sell into. But there's also something interesting that Donald Trump has done as it relates to his interaction with the Chinese leadership. Do you notice something? He hasn't said I'll put it positively.
He's not making it personal with them.
Right. And he says, these guys are great negotiators. They mm-hmm. know exactly what they're doing. Now, it's
He does that with everybody, though. He talks bad about people in general, and then specifically, including Kim Jong-un, and including Vladimir Putin, and including the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. You know, people who may be individually up to bad things. I kind of think I know what he's doing. I mean, it's very easy to criticize him for this, and I don't like this style of politics personally, but I think what he's doing is he's trying to create a personal relationship with him so that he can get closer to him to be able to affect his will. But I don't know that that's going to work in the long run.
So, look, I think in answer to your question on tariffs, we've got a lot to lose on tariffs because there's a big concern there.
Peter Roskam's with us. Hold on one second. We'll come right back. Peter Roskam is running for re-election in Illinois in the western and northwestern suburbs. That was his sixth, right?
Yes,
sixth
sir.
Congressional district. And we will we'll talk more to him right after we find out from Kim what's going on in the WGN newsroom at the bottom of the hour.
Roe, the search for a Wisconsin teen missing since her parents were found shot and killed in their home now in its fifth day.
Let's talk about the Hawks. They're off to an exciting start as they head to Columbus to battle the Blue Jackets Saturday at 6 on WGN TV Sports.
Okay. Peter Roskam is joining us. He is the congressman of the 6th Congressional District in the northwest suburbs and north suburbs of Chicago. Let's talk about... We were just kind of talking about the economic thing here. As you're out there campaigning, and we were just talking about this in the break, that campaigning is, it's local. I mean, you know, these districts are geographically bounded, right? You know who you have to talk to. You know where your voters are going to be. What are you hearing about the grander political tenor and actions that are going on here in Washington? How is that affecting you, especially as a Republican?
So people are concerned about tone. People are concerned about sort of the disposition. And I mentioned a minute ago that probably the first question I get in normal Q&A sessions is, how do people get along? I will tell them, and I'll tell you what I tell my 88-year-old mother, because she asked me the same thing. She says, how do you bear being a congressman? And, she's watching a lot of cable shows,
She's watching the Fox News. I know. My mom is, too. Okay. I know. We get all of our moms.
So here's the point. I said, Mom, look, when people are working together, and I'll give you a specific example. When people are working together, it doesn't get the attention that it deserves because nobody's calling one another names and it's not snarky and it's not aggressive. So let me give you the example. Both political parties came together on this opioid crisis. This thing is real. It's powerful. Right. It's whipsawing families. It's ruining communities. Both sides came together, recognized it, worked through some really significant things. I mean, really significant things as it relates to treatment, reimbursement, law enforcement. Everybody came together and was cool about it. And we passed a piece of legislation through the House and the Senate, agreeing, compromising back and forth, that I'm going to make a prediction today. And my prediction is in 10 years' time, we will be having a different and a better conversation on opioids based on the work that's happened. And it's been a reflection of the public. Now, that doesn't get a lot of attention. What gets a lot of attention is the finger pointing and the admonition and the name calling and all that sort of stuff.
Well, and the fact that there hasn't been any kind of resolution on major issues like health care and immigration. You know, two things that are pressing, and I know they become wedge issues this time of year. We have this giant caravan heading toward the U.S., and everyone wants to know, what do you think? What are we going to do with that? And how do these issues get resolved?
So I think they get resolved by breaking them down a little bit at a time. I'll tell you, I had a super interesting meeting with a group of undocumented moms in my constituency. So these are moms that live in West Chicago, and they wanted to come in and see me. So we sat down and I walked through and I said to them, here's my proposal. Let's fix the border. And I'm not for a wall, but a secure border. And then the drama comes down, basically.
It's funny. That's what you hear most people say. They're like, okay, well, the wall seems kind of a ridiculous thing because he wants to build it with his concrete guys that he built buildings with. But in the meantime, the idea of a secure border, I don't think 80% of the country would be behind, right? So, and an idea of a system, but then you've got these Hondurans who are coming up here, and you hear the stories of these people who are fleeing persecution, murder, rape, all these other things. And then last night, he's in Missoula, Montana, and he's talking about all these bad people who are coming up here. And then he's talking about, he likes that Gianforte guy who tackled body slammed a reporter when he was running for the Senate, for the special election in the Senate seat. and it's and he scares people, Peter. He scares more people than he did. The president scares more people than he doesn't.
So the
so as a Republican, how do you deal with that?
So the Daily Herald, they editorialized on my behalf and they endorsed me. And in the endorsement, they cited a number of times when I've stood up to the president, stood up, voted against him, spoke out against him on all these different issues. And they said, we think, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it memorized. They said, we think Peter Roskam is a good check on some of those bad impulses that you see coming from the White
House. How can a Republican be a good check on this? I think that's what a lot of people are wondering.
Right. So here's what you do.
Because there have been a lot of quiet guys. Devin Nunes, I mean, he scares me too. These are people who are willing to go around and try to hide around things that the American people should know about.
Okay, let me give you an example. You, the three of us right now are looking out over Lake Michigan, and the administration proposed cutting Great Lakes cleanup by 95%.
Correct.
Okay, that's just ridiculous. I went to Scott Pruitt, then the head of the EPA,
How's he doing?
I said, we're not going to do that. We're talking about the clean. We're talking about the drinking water of every single one of my constituents. Practically, we're not cutting that funding
of all of us listening here. Right,
and,
most of us listening.
All right, that's it. And so, not only did we not cut the funding, we made sure all of the funding was restored. Now, I didn't do this by myself. I was part of a group of people, but we got it done. You know, when the administration
and that got signed off on.
That got signed off on when the administration. Interestingly, when the administration early on, look at the news today on Russian on the Russian stuff. Breaking news all over the place.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The administration early on, when we were proposing to do prospective sanctions for 2018 meddling, they said, no, we're not going near this. What did we do? We rolled them. We got everybody together. We said, we're going to put this bill on the president's desk, and he was forced to back off to sign it. So what I'm saying is it's important to recognize in this election what we're contemplating is sending a representative to reflect a constituency to a co-equal branch of government. And that means working with the administration when it helps the district, taxes, all that sort of stuff, standing up to the administration when it makes sense to stand up to the administration on Great Lakes cleanup, on tariffs, on CHIP, you know, children's health insurance, and some of these other things.
Okay, well, let's talk about health insurance for a second, because obviously this is going to be, it's a bit of an issue now. It's going to be a much bigger issue in 2020, because there are going to be so many changes to, you know, what there is. There's this talk about another attempt to totally redo Obamacare, and, you know, pre-existing conditions is the big thing. And I think there's a lot of fear that pre-existing conditions are going to go away and Republicans are going to let them go away.
Okay, we're not going to let them go away. And so I brought with me a piece of paper because I knew you were going to ask me this and I want to quote this thing directly. So this is the exact two sentences. This is the language in the replacement bill that we proposed. It says, nothing in this act shall be construed as permitting health insurance insurers to limit access to health coverage for individuals with pre-existing conditions. Then built around that, in addition, are high-risk pools and other protections. So I think there's
But the question is, does that mean that you have to leave your own care, the people who've been working with you to on your pre-existing condition, if you have to go into a high-risk pool, then do you have to lose your provider?
No.
I mean, those kinds
so
of things.
Here, look, go back.
That's what scares people.
Right. So go back to the promise of the ACA. I was, you know, President Obama gave a speech in Chicago, and he made three big promises. If you like your coverage, you can keep it. If you like your doc, you can keep it. And you're going to save $2,500 on average per family. None of that happened.
Okay.
All right. So that was then. This is now. And then the question is, all right, here's where we are now. This is what I sense in my constituency. We are a restless group on healthcare right now. We're not happy with where we are. We don't want to go back to the old days. Nobody's nostalgic for that. We want pre-existing condition protections. We want to make sure we got no lifetime cap. And we might want to make sure that kids who are 26 can stay on their policies. But we got to do some serious transitions about how to get there.
All right. Peter Roskam, thank you for being here.
Thanks,
appreciate
Congressman.
It. Always nice to see you.
Thank you.
All right. Right now, we have got Kim Gordon in for Judy Pralak. She's got the WGN News being brought to you by TreeTime.com. All right. We're playing a little George Michael. Got to have faith. Because we got to have faith for Sunday. I got to have faith. Do I have faith? I don't know if I have faith. I don't know.
I've got faith.
Sweet Lou.
I've got faith.
Sweet Lou Kanellis, Fox 32.
Of course I have faith.
Wait, just wait a second. Let me introduce you first. Lou is the ultimate Bears fan, yet reporter, yet anchor. You see him. He's the man, literally. Were you to prick him, he would bleed orange and blue. Orange first, then blue, then orange. maybe a little bit of white. Now,
you got that right.
Here's my question. As we get ready for, these really are the dreaded, feared, hated New England Patriots pulling into town. Is there hope that, A, Khalil Mack is going to play? What can you tell us? And, B, will he be effective against that dink and dunk and throw it to that gigantic Gronk guy who's like a super, he's like one of those big, like, monsters.
He's a monster. He's a monster at tight end. Well, here's the latest. Khalil Mack is still questionable on the injury report. He practiced a little bit today. He was really limited in what he could do. Now, what you got to realize, again, he's got a right ankle injury. He suffered it in the Miami game. Don't let anyone tell you it didn't affect his play. He had two tackles the entire game. Obviously didn't get a sack. Did not have a tackle in the entire second half. So it obviously affected his play. He kept it close to the vest today, said he didn't want to talk about the injury. My fear is that it's a high ankle injury, and a high ankle injury takes longer to recuperate than a typical ankle injury. Yeah, so
that's where the foot doesn't roll inward, it rolls outward. Problem. That's that. So it's in the interior. The sprain or the damage is on the interior part of the ankle, not the anterior part of the ankle.
Here's the good news about a guy like Mack. He reminds me of a Michael Jordan when Jordan refused to sit. Mack has never missed a game as a pro. Five NFL seasons, streak of 69 consecutive games played. So to keep him out, you better have him somehow tied in the locker room, because if he gets on that sideline, he's playing. That's the kind of guy he is.
Yeah.
So my guess is that they kept him. I mean, what more? The guy, we saw the way the guy played against the Packers, and he missed an entire training camp. So he really doesn't need to practice this week. And if it's going to help the ankle by keeping him off the practice field, then I think I'm pretty sure, again, that he's going to play. Here's another concern. Allen Robinson has been dealing with a groin issue, kept him out of Thursday's practice, but he returned to the practice field on Friday.
Yeah. How do you look?
Bryce Callahan, who's a defensive back, he plays the nickelback position. He suffered an ankle injury Thursday afternoon. He sat out today's practice, but I think.
Why does this sound like a funeral now? I don't know why. Now I'm worried. It's sort of this is like when you call your mom and she's, did you hear what happened to Mrs. Callahan? You know, sort of like it's like too much. I don't know. Lou, you're supposed to be making me feel better.
Can I make you feel a little bit better? Because you were talking about they're almost like the evil empire, the New England Patriots. You love to hate them because of their success. So I did a little research, and here are the numbers. Tell me that these just aren't crazy. The Bears, the last 12 seasons, all right, since 2006, have been to the playoffs twice. The 2005 team that went to the Super Bowl in 2006, mm-hmm. and the 2010 team that lost in the NFC Championship
to the Green Packers. Bay Packers.
Right,
yes.
When Cutler was out of the last second.
The smoking Cutler meme is from that game.
That's right.
Twice in 12 seasons. New England, since Bill Belichick took over in the year 2000. So over the last 18 years, has won the AFC East 16 times. They've won 8 AFC championships, and they have won 5 Super Bowl titles.
This is like when I call
That's
my mother.
Helping.
No, this is even worse now. This is like when I call my mother, she goes, do you know what Mrs. Callahan's son does?
He's a cardiothoracic surgeon.
I know that you have some play that you do every day. But he actually saves lives, and he makes $15 million a year.
I know.
I mean,
thanks, Lou.
What are you doing, Lou? You're killing me over here.
How about some positive vibes, Lou? Mitch Trubisky, 670 yards, 9 touchdowns over the past 2 games, and some high praise from Bill Belichick today about this Bears offense. It's definitely progressed over the past couple games here.
Man, I'll take it. I'll tell you what, the guy has been terrific the last 2 games. You ran off the numbers. He's actually been solid throughout the season. You know, you look at his passer rating, he's just behind Patrick Mahomes, who everyone's already anointed as the MVP in this league, and Jared Goff. So he's really come along. I saw another interesting number. Do you know Trubisky was 7 years old when Brady won his first Super Bowl?
Right, five when he was drafted.
And Brady's older than the Bears head coach, Matt Nagy.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, 41 years old.
Oh, no.
But here, you're looking for positives. Here's a positive. Matt Nagy has had some terrific success against the New England Patriots going back to his Kansas City days. And you only need to go back to last year, week one, against New England. Nagy as offensive coordinator. Now, the Chiefs were a 9-point dog in that game against, at that time, the Super Bowl defending champs, because they had won the Super Bowl the year before against Atlanta. Kansas City wins that game in Foxborough, 42-27. They post 537 yards of offense against the Patriots. That's the most ever against a Bill Belichick team until the Eagles rack up 538 in February Super Bowl. So, listen, Nagy offensively knows what to do against this Bill Belichick defense. And so if you're looking for positives, I like the fact that Matt Nagy is on our side, and he has had success against Belichick's team.
You know, I think if the Bears are going to beat the Patriots here, I think they got to score a lot of points. I think there's a lot of pressure on Mitch Trubisky. I don't know if he's necessarily feeling it, but from my vantage, or at least the way I'm thinking of the Bears winning this game, it's limit Brady, of course. Obviously, don't do all the dumb things, penalties, turnovers, things like that. But if Trubisky can play the way he's played the last two games, and this defense kind of plays what we expect them to play at, Brady's going to get points no matter what. But how many points? He put up over 40 last week against Kansas City. If the Bears offense can score over 30 points, I think they can win this game.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that Trubisky's playing with house money. You said he's got pressure. I don't think he has any pressure. Everyone knows who's going to be the star on that football field Sunday.
That's true.
And he wears a Patriots uniform, and he wears number 12. So I think Trubisky's playing with house money. If he plays poorly, no one's going to say, well, you know, he played poorly, that's why the Bears lost.
Right.
They're going to say, hey, he went up against the greatest of all time. If he plays well, because he's playing loose, and the Bears, and listen, I'm not crazy about New England's defense. Yeah. The Kansas City posted 40 on him. I know the Colts earlier this season had a big game. I think they had 24 points against New England's defense. I think the Bears can score against New England's defense. It's going to be a high-scoring game. I'm just not sure that they can stop Tom Brady without a healthy Khalil Mack on the football field.
Okay. Mm. Would you like to read something from our new friend Vic's
Salerno. Vic Salerno from yesterday, from the gambling?
Yeah. Vic Salerno.
Mm-hmm.
Bet Chicago. So I just want to read their analysis here, too.
Okay. Oh, they've got a...
Wise guys steam the Patriots at -3 even, and again at -3, -105 late Sunday night. Steam is a quick and uniform line movement across betting markets. It went from 3.5 down to 3. At one point, it was down to 2.5. Now,
home underdogs have performed very well against the spread.
Against the spread.
What are you guys talking about? It's like a foreign language.
Let us talk betting here for just a minute.
Just give us a minute.
Hang in there with us.
Again, I'm going to quote here from Bet Chicago. Home dog bettors found value with 3 and a hook, pushing the line back to the key number, a 3, across the board in Vegas. Your thoughts, Lou Kanellis?
I'm laying the 3.
I'm laying the three.
I'm sorry. I'm laying the 3.
You're laying a tree, and you're gonna pick up, and you're gonna lay the tree, and you're gonna pick up the Bears.
Can I buy the hook?
How much you want for the hook? You want me to put my -110?
Give me a nickel on the hook.
Okay.
Or a dime.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
Are you in for a dime? In for a dime on this?
I'm in for a dime.
You're in for a dime.
This
okay.
is big.
All right.
Oh,
hey, Lou, it does say something, though, to see Vegas give the Bears some respect here. Because, I mean, it in past years, when they faced the Tom Brady-led team, it's always sort of been a wake-up call. Even that Brian Urlacher team kind of got trashed. And to see the line where it's at, I think it does show that there's respect for the Bears in different sort of worlds, if you want to call it the betting world, or just, you know, the reporters.
Well, the betting
fans.
World is the real world.
That's true. Okay. That's
true. A consensus number.
So to see that number, then... That's basically a coin flip now between the Bears and Patriots at Soldier Field. That's something we really...
A little more on a coin flip, because a coin flip would be +3 for the Bears. But this is... because that would be... That's kind of even, right?
It's -3, so it is plus...
That's minus. It's minus. The Patriots are given three.
Right.
He's well. Lou
a road
said,
team.
Well, let me hold on. Let me explain for Anna. What Lou just said.
Yeah.
Is that he's willing to concede? He thinks that he likes the three.
I'm telling you that. No. I'm telling you, I'm taking the Pats and laying the three.
All right.
I misunderstood. Okay.
Hey, there was something
lost in translation.
Explain something else to me. Because this is Matt Nagy was asked this, and he seemed to really smile and light up. I think it was yesterday afternoon. Reporters said, so the quarterback with the higher passer rating in the game is Mitch Trubisky over Brady. How is that possible?
Well, because he's gotten off to a better start. I mean, I'm all about wins and losses, Anna, so I don't get caught up. I think the passer rating is showing development for Mitch Trubisky. You know, his passer rating is better. His numbers are better than they were a year ago. He's obviously thrown a lot more touchdown passes and interceptions. Actually, he's shown progress just the last 3 weeks. But, yeah, he has got a better passer rating. I think he's got a better passer rating than Aaron Rodgers, too. I'm not sure, but his passer rating's been terrific, and a lot of that is inflated after that Tampa game.
Right. Hey, can I ask you one more thing? The over-under, 49.5. 49
and a
half.
They're going to blow by that number.
Pounding the over.
Pound it. No rain, 48 degrees, sunny on the lakefront.
Another dime?
Are you kidding me?
Another dime on that? Another dime on the over?
No, give me a nickel and then give me a nickel on the parlay.
Yeah, okay.
There you go.
Got it.
All Patriots right. Minus three.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Give me another deuce on the Patriots.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, deuce on what? On the Patriots what? You want
on the go ahead.
On the what? What do you want to do?
I actually was going to be just play a little safe here and give me 200 on the Bears on the money line. So yeah,
oh.
I know I'm sacrificing,
oh, you hedged.
But if they shock, you know, the world.
I like
maybe
that.
I make up some money.
I like that.
We have
Lou.
Just spent $2,000 of Lou's money right there, just in this right here.
Heavy over though. Play that over.
Bro, it was their road dollars. They're not Lou's
Robux,
money. They're
right.
Road dollars.
Yeah, Robux.
Remember that?
Robux. Yes.
Robux. Thank
Robux.
You.
Yeah. Okay. This is the way. All right. Well, I'm going with my knowledge here from Bet Chicago. I'm kind of liking this website. So I'm going.
What are you
with
going with? I mean, I
can't. I can't do it. I can't do it. I'm taking the three, and yeah. I can't. I know it's probably a loser. I am going to pound the over. I'm going to go a little lighter on the Bears here because I can't bet on the Patriots. I'm sorry. Sometimes you bet and you just feel better that you won the money as opposed to the Bears losing. You know, you had a bit. It's like bad. I just can't. I can't do it on this.
Go
one.
Bears money line and over, and you'll do just fine Sunday.
Wow!
Oh, that's what's the money line paying? Do you know?
I don't know. But
I don't. What is it? Plus 250 plus.
Hold on.
I don't know.
Hey Vic,
get Vic Salerno on the phone. Yeah,
that was
he'll
the greatest
figure that
moment.
Out for
he was down in Springfield lobbying for sports betting, and we talked to him.
He was all fired up.
And I was, swear to God, it was the funniest thing ever. I'm like, if he said that to these senators and representatives while he was down there, these state reps, I would have just done whatever he said because he sounded like, it was like, okay, no one gets hurt. Okay, I get it.
You wouldn't want to see him in the parking lot.
Right, I'll do it. We're fine. Okay, what do you mean?
Nobody gets hurt. Nobody gets exactly. Hurt.
Oh, you got to do this and no one gets hurt. And he's okay. I'm with you. All right. I love him. Okay. We'll reconvene. Can we talk early next week, Lou? I'd like to just
yes,
get your thoughts in the afterwards.
I'd like to talk on Monday just to see if I have any money left.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Lou.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks,
all right,
Lou.
Guys.
All right, bye. Now we've totally confused people.
I know.
But it looks about, I think
that
Lou
went
is,
really
what,
deep.
What Lou is saying is that he thinks that the Patriots are going to win this game and by more than a field goal.
And that's a lot for him to say because he's very optimistic about the Bears. But yeah. This will be a tough
I'll give
matchup.
This a normal basic prediction. Bears 26, Patriots 24.
All right. But even if the Bears stay in this in a really big way or if the defense looks really good, isn't that something to be happy about this developing team? I mean,
yeah, I think so. I mean, the Patriots are a really good team. If you can stick with them, you're probably a decent team as well. But if the Bears score a lot of points, look, I mean, the Chiefs scored over 40 points and still lost the other day, and the Bears have a much better defense than the Chiefs. So I think it's a very winnable game at home. I really do.
Okay. All right. So to get to 26, That 26-24, I know what he's doing there. He's trying to get to the over 50 number there. But to get to 26-24 means that the kicker missed an extra point. So that's all I'm going to...
But weird things happen. Yeah, I know. Missed PATs.
Okay, that's a CBA. All right. Right now, let's check in with Kim and find out what's going on in the WGN newsroom.
Ro, we'll bring you the latest on a car that crashed into a building near the Apple store this afternoon on Michigan Avenue.
Ro Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up at Canard Boy. Hold on, let me tell you what's coming up.
Okay.
I turn the page. I only have the first page for the first 2 hours of the show, the second page, the second 2 hours of the show, and I never know. I keep the second 2 hours a secret to myself so I can be excited. Let me share this with you. Canarvel wagon is going to be rolling here in a few minutes. The Globe Pub is going to be here. This is a sports bar with a bit of a soccer flair to it.
Oh.
And they are big tailgating experts. So
I've driven past this place at least 400 times, so I can't wait to actually kind of get to know what it's all about.
Where is it?
This is in North Center.
South Irving Park.
Ah. Yeah.
Nice. People who know.
They have that sign that it looks like it's a globe, and it says the Globe. So
it's a globe.
Like it's an Earth, but I've always passed. I got to pop in there, and I never pop in, so I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, if you dig, I'm kind of a Premier League fan. I like the soccer.
Yeah, and those guys go Saturday nuts. Morning. They get up at like 8 in the morning to go party.
Oh, 8.
Bars.
They get up at 4 o'clock in the morning in some cases.
Well, they're working on different time zones, right, for the soccer games. So they got to put in the extra effort.
Yeah, but anyway, so we'll talk about that. So they got a gigantic beer list and all that, and the tailgating tips. And then Colin Peternick is going to be here. He has
a famous dad, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, whatever.
Somebody we know
whatever
with purple
his dad
hair.
Does. Yeah, whatever. Colin is the real talent in this family. I don't care what
talented.
Jim has done. This kid is unbelievable. He's going to do Live Music Friday with us. He's got a solo project that is great. The kid, we'll tell the story on the air a little bit later. Mm-hmm. I once almost got him kicked out of high school.
Oh my gosh. That sounds terrible.
Yes.
Does he have purple hair too? Does it run in the family? Or
I don't think so. I've never met him. Mom's blonde, so I think I don't think he's got the
purple. He takes after
but
that
when you
side.
Do the purple and the blonde, he's got beautiful hair.
Ah, oh, great.
That's all we're going to say.
Awesome.
All right, are you ready? Are you people ready? All right, here we go.
It's the top five on the Ro Concho Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Ro Concho Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, here we go. Checking in at
number five.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions was in town today, back in the Chicago Police Department, in the face of a proposed plan to overhaul it, saying that cops are not the problem.
We do not need to treat Chicago's officers like some sort of rogue police department because of the actions of a few, even if they're very bad actions. As leaders, we must hammer the wrongdoers, but affirm and support the vast majority of those who do their duty every day faithfully, properly, courageously.
Now, he addressed the Chicago Crime Commission today, and he criticized this negotiated plan between the city and the state to overhaul the 12,000-member police force under court supervision.
If you let Antifa, if you let ACLU set police policy, crime will go up. If you listen to police and professionals, crime will go down. We want crime going down. Chicago is a powerful part of America's productivity. It is indeed a city that works. In so many ways, Chicago has made progress in recent years. Its prosperity cannot be endangered by rising crime.
All right. The only thing that I don't disagree with him. Except,
what, that the consent decree is not good?
No, I don't disagree with his premise that we do need to rely more on the experience of the police here. Cannot put we certainly cannot tolerate police misconduct and police brutality and things like that. That is true. Understood, and good cops understand that as well.
Right.
But here's the problem I have with that is he drops Antifa into it because it's a political talking point of the president. And Antifa, like MS-13, has nothing to do with Chicago.
Except the consent decree allows for groups in who are activist groups to have a seat at the table when it comes to police reform and defining the rules for the police department, and the civilians do too. And so he's, I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm saying he's sort of outlining that police are fearful that those groups don't necessarily understand policing and will have maybe put in policies that might be detrimental to the way they get the job done.
Even if
they are, and you're right, we do have a problem with a few bad apples in this police department that should be rooted out. But beyond that, the point he's making is the police should have the power to police their own department with some oversight.
All right. Checking in at
number four.
President Trump fired off a few words at Joe Biden at a rally in Montana last night.
How about Sleepy Joe Biden? Sleepy Joe. Remember, he challenged me to a fight, and that was fine. And when I said he wouldn't last long, he'd be down faster than Greg would take him down. He'd be down so fast. Remember? Faster than Greg. I have to go very fast. I'd have to immediately connect.
So he's talking about, first of all, you know, punching Joe Biden. Joe Biden did start this with the, back in when we were kids, I'd like to take him out of the schoolyard kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Biden's maybe the only guy other than Donald Trump who can get away with that. Because remember, Joe Biden was crazy talking when he was vice president. Remember they had to call him into the office and tell him to shut up, and they sent him on a world tour to get him out of the country for a mm-hmm. while during the healthcare thing because he was getting in the way of everything. But there was a moment last night in this rally where the president is applauding this Greg Gianforte who ran for in a special election for the Senate last year mm-hmm. and or earlier this year, and he body slammed a reporter who asked him a question, a legitimate reporter asking a legitimate question.
Oh, gee.
And he didn't like it, and he ran down and he body slammed the guy, and then he got convicted of assault. And he still won the special election.
Of course.
He got convicted of assault. He got sentenced to community service and hours of anger management training. Right, but he still won the election, this was not like some a Howard Stern guy running at him or TMZ running up to him on a curb. This was a legitimate question that he was being asked, and the president going to that whole point of endorsing the idea of physically attacking the press where does he stop? And I know there are some dumbasses that are going to fall for it and going to go, yeah. But most thinking Americans are not dumbasses. And most thinking Americans, and I would posit this, that most people, even the people who really like Donald Trump, wouldn't agree with that.
No, I would think they would not. Violence, no. But he's taking shots at everyone who he perceives as someone who will rise from the pack of Democrats to run against him.
And then he was in Scottsdale, Arizona today, and he doubles down.
Do you regret bringing up last night at your rally the assault on a reporter by a congressman?
No, not at all. That was a different world. That was a different league, a different world. No, he's just a great guy, and he's you know Greg very well, right? It was that was a tremendous success last night in Montana, and Greg is a tremendous person, and he's a tough cookie, and I'll stay with that. You're talking about a different world.
Yeah.
What's a different world?
I don't know.
Literally body slamming a guy who's half your size is a different world because you don't like the question? What does that mean, it's a different world?
When someone pleads guilty to a misdemeanor assault, and you say, this is great?
I mean, come on.
It's not right.
Come on. I mean, congressman. But that's like a senator in Montana because there's only a congressman. Please. Don't, first of all, don't ever start a question of the president, do you regret? Because right. It doesn't matter. You could say,
point.
Do you regret bombing Pearl Harbor? And he would somehow defend it. I mean, it's like, there's nothing. There is nothing.
Also, don't ask him what grade he would give himself.
Right.
Another question.
A plus.
Not to ask.
For what? For everything. For everything. Have you ever made a mistake? No. Right? I mean, I get this is, it's his own style of doing that. I'm sure in his own conscience, he's probably, you know, is conflicted, if not more than most of us. But that you're never going to get that answer. All right, no. Let's check in with Kim, find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Roe, the case of a missing Chicago grandmother now being called a murder.
Then there's this November 6th, you have the power to influence the course of politics. Follow the most comprehensive local political news online, chicagotribune.com/midterms.
All right. Here we go. We're in the top five at five. Mr. Richard Roper has also stepped into the studio here.
Greetings.
Rich.
Anybody's keeping a scorecard at home. He's a substitution. It's a legal substitution.
Like the Milwaukee Brewers, they do a fake starter, and then they put me in.
Yeah, there we go. Let's check in at
number three.
Oh, you thought that the story of making a murderer was over, but you'd be wrong. There's even more to the story of Stephen Avery and Brendan Dassey. Part two, debuting on Netflix. Maura Demos, who is the creator, explains why these new episodes will get you more than just what you've read in these headlines.
Mm. Let's say you're in New York, as we are today, and you flew to L.A. and said, oh, yes, I crossed the country and I landed in L.A. I know everything about L.A. But if you took a train, you would learn a whole lot more. You'd learn, you know, what that journey was like, what it meant to land on the West Coast, and it would have a totally different meaning to you. So, you know, the headlines are the most surface level of the plot, and the plot is not the story.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm looking forward to this one. Come on, we were all glued to the first round.
Yes, we're glued
and
to it,
we'll
but I never
glued.
Bought it. I never bought it.
Mm-hmm. Never bought what part?
I never bought the fact that he didn't do it.
Either one of them? You thought the Brendan Dassey, too, was
on the team? Brendan
Dassey
was there at the time. That's what I thought.
How do you get one of those podcast voice? They all have the same.
They do.
They do.
Very slightly.
It's the old NPR voice.
It is. Absolutely.
Here's exactly what we're going to do.
Yes, no matter what they talk about it, there's the same level of excitement.
If you've ever flown into Los Angeles, like I have many times.
World War III is broken
number
out.
Two.
Dave Chappelle on stage in Dublin was asked about Kanye.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Kanye had that Make America Great Again hat on, and he was like, this is like my cape. I was thinking to myself, just wear a cape. I felt like, I honestly, all jokes aside, I felt like my friend is bipolar. And I felt like he was having a manic episode on television. And I was initially angry that they paraded him in front of those cameras. Kanye thinks and says things as fast as he thinks them without refining them before he says them.
Mr. Chappelle happens to be right about all of that.
Number one.
Stephen Colbert last night. What does he think about this fight that broke out between John Bolton and White House Chief of Staff John Kelly?
Well, it's good they didn't do it inside the Oval Office. That is reserved for the sacred presidential duty of tweeting about porn stars being horse faces. Apparently, the fight boiled over from a bitter disagreement that has existed between the two for weeks now over a recent surge in border crossings. Fellas, don't fight. You're both terrible.
Gosh.
All right. You know, it's time for the Knarble Wagon.
We need it.
Thank goodness.
Bring it on.
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one beer, one bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
Tastes great.
makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it, I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, sir.
Greg is smart. And by the way, never wrestle him. You understand that? Never. Any guy that can do a body slam, he's my kind. How about Sleepy? Remember, he challenged me to a fight, and that was fine. He wouldn't last long. He'd be down faster than Greg would take him down.
Yeah.
He'd be down so fast. And
I'm done.
Pled guilty to assault as well. Yeah.
He's right about Joe Biden. If he tried to fight the president, there's like 25 Secret Service agents. He would be down really fast. You know, Trump couldn't beat him.
You know what they should do? In 2020, they shouldn't hold an election. Just a fight.
Just a big fight?
Yeah. And they could promote it. Be Vegas. Yeah. Sheldon Adelson would make a bunch of money off it. It'd be great.
A Royal Rumble. Yeah. Royal Rumble.
Cage
wins.
Match. Last one. Oh, my gosh.
I'd pay for it. Pay-per-view. Right.
Think, pay-per-view?
Big pay-per-view event. And whoever comes out is president of the United States.
I mean, it might be a different thing.
Don't you think Trump is... ceiling down.
Is Trump probably in the worst physical shape of any president, including FDR, who was in a wheelchair for most of his two and a half terms?
No. Was it Harrison, who was like 340? I'll be honest, you know, I don't think so. I think,
Taft a big boy?
Yeah, Taft's a big boy. Right? And then our guy, maybe Harrison wasn't the big, who's the guy that died like 20 days into his...
Called a cold at the inauguration.
That guy was in worse physical shape.
No, inauguration corpse, I still think, even against Trump in a fight. I'm just saying.
I would like to see Trump against Warren G. Harding in a fight.
Gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Or at least in a charm contest, like, but they take them both to a bar and have them hit on women and see who comes out.
Kind of like a bachelor thing, you know. Yes. Sort of set up a presidential bachelor.
That's what I'd like to see. Hey, the Carnarvon wagon is out. Thank goodness. God that the Carnarvon wagon is out and the Globe Pub is here.
Thanks.
And Megan Kosminski is the proprietor over there. At least she's shown up with the grub and the beer. And now the Globe is known if you are a soccer fan. I mean, there's just, if you are from England or Ireland or the continent,
Naperville, then you have the 7-year-old, they're big soccer fans.
Right, exactly. But I mean, I'm telling you, like, I have friends from Scotland, and they are, you know, this is a destination to go see these games, right? Because you guys have been doing this for years.
Yeah, we've been around for almost 15 years now. We were one of the first places to show anything that we could show anywhere from Europe. So we open super early on the weekends. I actually have to work at 5:30 tomorrow morning.
Oh my gosh. What's
on
tomorrow?
Open 5:30?
So no, we open it. We'll open at 6 and the first game starts at 6:30.
But what's the game? There's a soccer game?
Yeah, there's an English Premier League match on, and it is, Man United and Chelsea.
Yeah. That's a gigantic one.
Oh boy. People start drinking at that time too? Is it start at 6 a.m.?
No, honestly, people kind of eat breakfast. They chill out for a little bit, might have a beer, you know, or a
Bloody Mary, maybe
a mimosa.
Sure.
It just depends. So yeah, that's what we do. We show everything live: rugby, soccer, cricket, whatever we can get our hands on.
Oh, good.
And of course, cricket, which takes, you know, 18
hours.
Yeah. It takes 18 days.
Yeah, it does. It takes a while.
And then it can end in a tie. Isn't that true?
That is true, yeah. And we also show, obviously, our local sports. We're a Big Bears bar, Cubs bar. We're actually a 49ers bar as well, believe it or not.
Somebody had to be.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll show anything. I mean, I get calls from people all the time. Hey, can you show this third-tier team from... you know, Iran, and if I can find it, I will show it for them.
Good for you. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you can bring all your people out there and hang out and watch the game.
Do you have a gigantic satellite dish? How are you doing it?
We operate through DirecTV, Comcast, and then we also subscribe to a number of streaming services.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you can do it streaming. Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
And you're able to get it fast enough for it to work.
Yeah, yeah. We actually just remodeled, and we were closed from April 2nd until June 8th, so the week before the World Cup. And we just installed a brand new TV system, 20 HD 4K TVs, a bunch of letters that I don't know what they actually mean. But... Yeah. high def, all that good stuff.
The state Q, the art. L, the E, yeah, and the D. Exactly. That's the sort of thing.
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. State of the art for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because, again, European folks, you know, who are here that are either living here temporarily or they moved here because they married an American. I don't know however it worked out.
And we couldn't convince them to go back to Europe.
And you know, like Premier League is on NBC Sports Network. So there's a lot of, you know, so people can see that. Mm-hmm. But if you have a specific team, either not in the Premier League, right, but in one of the other European leagues, one of the lower leagues in England, or Scotland's got its own league, or the Irish have their own league, and they are just nuts about their teams. They can't find it anywhere, and you guys do it.
That's cool.
And that it is really cool, and you get to see the fandom. And then once you see the fandom of this, I think to me, soccer is, you know, the only more connected sports fans in the world. They're probably the most connected sports fans in the world. Mm-hmm. But, you know, American football and college football probably right behind it.
Yeah, that's true. And honestly, it's interesting what we've cultivated over the years is the ability to show multiple games, multiple teams, which you would never see in Europe. I mean, France, England, Spain.
No, they kill Italy, each other in
they
the bar.
They kill each other. Yeah, it's a very aggressive thing. And so we have, what I like to say is, you know, talk trash during the game, have a pint afterwards, right? And so we have Arsenal is our prominent
yes!
crowd. Are you an Arsenal supporter?
Arsenal.
Yes!
Awesome. Yeah.
Oh, well, so, see, now then I got to go all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're the official Arsenal bar in Chicago. But we also have Aston Villa, which is one of the oldest teams in the EPL, who unfortunately has been relegated for the last couple years, but they show up strong 25.
I'll explain what she's talking about later to everybody.
Yeah. He and I are just talking about it now. Yeah. Nobody else. Sometimes I just feel like I'm like spitting things at people. Right. And like they just glaze over.
I bet you get that feeling a lot at the Globe because you've got all the different sort of fans of these obscure forms.
Absolutely. But yeah, so it's great. So Arsenal's our primary. Then we have Aston Villa, Liverpool, Manchester City. We have, it just runs the gamut. Tottenham, Chelsea. Literally, we will show, and not just English, but we will show anything. Barcelona, Real Madrid, whatever you want to watch. PSG for sure. Yeah. Anything you want to watch, if you call, you email, whatever it is, if we can get it, we will put it on TV.
Cool. How about that?
She knows the difference between Ronaldo and Reynaldo. Mm. She could tell us right now.
Of course you
do. And then the two different Ronaldos, too. Which Ronaldo
are you
talking about?
What if he's in trouble for something? You wouldn't want to get him.
You never know. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Don't ask.
No comment.
Yes.
Then I just go no comment on this.
You should.
Okay, good.
You should.
One of them's in Italy now, and they say, "Why is he doing? Where'd he go? What's he doing?"
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, this is it's very exciting stuff. And then for people who want to go, but you're also like tailgate experts. Don't you do like a tailgate?
Yeah. Product? So currently we're raffling off a pair of tickets after the end of every Bears game for the remaining home games for the season.
Oh wow!
So it's really easy. $5 per ticket, per raffle ticket, and then at the end of the Bears game, you just have to be present to win, and you could win essentially two Bears tickets for $5 if luck was on your side, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we do nachos, pretzels, chicken wings. I mean, your standard bar fare. When we were closed, we actually...
And you do this to go so people can take this for tailgating?
Yeah, 100%. When we were closed, we actually revamped our menu, kind of elevated the ingredients. So everything's scratch made, fresh. You know, we're not...
You're a big deal.
Well, I was going to say these nachos, they taste very... Like, it's like a meal. It's really awesome.
They're very good. Those roasted veggies on there are my favorite.
So good. Mm-hmm. So you have track people from all over the world. You have the beer list from around the world, too? I mean, what do you got going on there?
So we have 45 draft lines currently, and that runs the gamut from local Chicago stuff to regional stuff to national stuff to international. Obviously, we have Guinness, we have Boddington's, things like that, that the people that we see.
What'd you bring? All right, let's stop talking.
Okay.
You want a drink?
Okay. All right, so the first one you guys have is the Chimay Grand Reserve.
Did
you say Chimay?
Chimay.
I did.
Oh boy, that's that one's up at the top for me.
Yeah, it's a Belgian strong ale. It's nine. It's
up at the top.
Guys.
I thought you were a Miller Lite guy.
I am a Miller man, but Chimay. Yeah.
Kevin and I went to the hockey game last night.
Yeah, did you have a Miller Lite?
And we stopped by Queenie's.
Mm.
Over by Queenie's.
Great.
Oh,
spot.
The new one.
The new restaurant there, and we sat there for a little while during the second period.
Sure.
And we actually, the funny thing is, we never were ever in the bowl of the stadium. We just went from bar to bar to bar to bar.
Nice.
And we're drinking. And Kevin, as it turns out, has a very sophisticated palate because they got a lot of beers there.
Yeah.
And so when he says Chimay, he knows a little bit about something here. Yeah. He's actually.
Monks make that beer.
Yeah. Did the monks do make it?
They do.
Did you go home and put all the beers in your diary, Kev?
Yes, I do. I've got a. I'll surprise all of you with my beer knowledge.
Just in case, I've been telling them to keep a diary.
Good
I
idea.
Like beer.
Yep,
I love beer.
I like beer.
You still like beer?
Yep. I love it.
All right, so now this is very delicious.
It's really good, though.
Now, what's the ABV on this one?
It's 9%, so mm-hmm. It's a heavy hitter. Right, yeah. It's a heavy hitter, yeah, but the flavor's really on point.
Yeah, I like smooth. Any beer that tastes like scotch, I am all over it.
Wow. Amazing.
All right, and this, now, is that French, did you say? Is that?
The Chimay is out of Belgium.
Belgium, mm-hmm. Okay.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah, they do.
Doing for it for a long time.
Right. For sure, yeah.
Figured a few things out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they figured out how to avoid France and Germany for many years.
That's true.
Very true.
So they got to figure out how to, when you can figure that
we're
out.
Brewing here since 1366.
Yeah. Can't get involved in your scrabbles.
All right, what's next?
So the next one you have is the La Fin du Monde by Unibrew, and that's actually out of Quebec.
End of the world is what that means.
Also, 9%, guys. So just decide what kind of night you're trying to have.
That's what night I have every night. So this is quite great.
Mm.
Yeah, I've had this a number of times. And you have this on handles?
Or no, we have it in the bottle. So primarily our bottle selection is going to be international, and we try to rotate out our draft for local, national, and international. Keep it fresh.
I know we have so many people in for the Carnarvon Wagon who, you know, are now local brewers. Mm-hmm. Chicago is such an amazing city for beer. It's now thriving. I mean, it's right up there amongst the best in the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In our neighborhood alone, I had Dovetail and Beguile are open in the last few years. And
yes, we had them in a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, they're great neighbors. We put their stuff on, and, you know, like I said, we just try to rotate through so you can try something a little bit different.
I'm surprised
time.
You're not trying to kill each other because they're across the alley from each other.
Yeah.
And they're kind of competitors, but but you know what they are? They're kind of beer stoners. Yeah. And they're like into.
Totally.
Like,
laid back guys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love you, man. I love you too. It's kind of hippies. I kind of like it.
They should get little soccer clubs and play against each other
in
and
the
then
alley.
The globe can show it on the 27th screen.
Yeah.
It's like just a local game between
absolutely.
The two
absolutely. We'll charge a cover for that. Do it on paper.
We forgot the ball.
That's all right. You know what? I want to lay down anyway.
Oh my God.
All right. Let's see here. Now we got that. Yeah. What do we got now?
Next you have the Xingu Brazilian Black Lager. And I'm not going to try to pronounce the city where it's from in Brazil because I do not speak Portuguese. Yeah. But it is 4.6%. So it's what you would consider a session, right?
Yeah.
If you were talking about domestics.
That one's nice.
It's really nice. It's malty. Smooth. It's malty. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's really good.
Yeah, that's like one that people
reminds
love.
Me of a Nuki brown ale.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Wow. Three for three. Joe. When did that happen?
So, Nana, look at that.
Oh, snap.
Did you hear that? Somebody's been going
you
to classes.
Really, I just have to keep up with you guys.
Do they do this
I'm
at the chopping
now.
Block?
I'm gambling and drinking beer
one,
to keep
though.
Up with my friends at work.
Soon in the studio.
Exactly. I'm at the racetrack this weekend. I'm just trying
to
learn.
Like, hey, Rich, Patriots are laying 3.5 as a road favorite. I don't know about that.
Beef jerky the month club soon.
What
the
heck?
We already, that? Please, don't go that far.
We had to explain to her what a dime was because Lou Canales says, you know, Lou's laying the three, and he wants a dime on that.
Oh, jeez.
He wants 200 on the money line on the Bears just as a backup.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah, and then he wants and he's going to put a nickel on the over.
And probably parlay it all together.
Yeah, and another nickel on the parlay.
Nice. And I said he can't get hurt because you're just playing with nickels and dimes. So, I'm all for it.
All right, Globe Pub is here. We're going to drink some more with them coming up right after we find out from Kim what's coming up at the top of the hour in the news.
Saudi Arabia now confirming the death of journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Then there's this. Tune into the Steve Cochran Show Monday morning. Dan Hampton will join Steve at 7:10. Hopefully, talk about a Bears victory.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
We have OB is going to be with us in the afternoon.
Yep.
And I can tell you right now, there's going to be screaming, yelling, crying, and gnashing of teeth. Things
are
going to
get
broken.
It's not going to be okay if they lose.
No.
And they could.
It's not going to be good. All right. Megan Kamensky is with us. She is the general manager of the Globe Pub on Irving Park in Chicago. You know, we've been talking about this. Just so excited about it. But you're Damon and Irving, essentially, right?
Yeah, Damon and Irving, Lincoln, where that, you know, the three-way
North Center.
Yeah, North
together.
Center. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. So if you want to go and enjoy, it's on Sundays, it's football.
Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. We've got great specials every other day of the week. So anytime you want to swing through, it's a great neighborhood joint at night, not full of soccer hooligans all the time. Very family friendly. We're two blocks off the Irving Park Brown line.
Nice.
So.
But if you really want to see something, you want to see what Europe looks like, and you don't have the money or the inclination to go on a Saturday morning at 6:00 in the morning and watch the British, the Scots, the Irish, the Germans, and the Italians try to kill each other.
Wow.
It is it you it can't and also and I'll bet you got a lot of Serbians and Croatians and stuff like that too, right?
Yeah, and we have a huge Azerbaijani crowd actually that comes out.
Look at the Azerbaijanis! Yeah.
I mean,
here.
We literally see every group in Chicago. We see them.
It's like the United Nations.
It kind
love
of
it.
Yeah, because yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They do they put up on their screens. They got this great satellite capability and online mm-hmm. capability. They put up games from all over the world in soccer and cricket cool. and everything else. It's really
it's not called the Globe for nothing,
right?
Exactly.
Look at that. She just figured that out too. Nicely done, kid.
Thanks.
All right. That's enough of that.
And the food's great too. It's awesome. Just from the little tasting menu we had here.
Yes. So you know I couldn't be more excited for you than I am right now. Stop by theglobepub.com. That's if you want more details on this. But like we said, it is at 1934 West Irving Park in Chicago. Megan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
The news coming your way in 2 minutes.
I'm never gonna fall again, no. I'm never gonna stall again, no. I'm never gonna hang my head low. I'm never giving up my secrets. I'm never gonna fall again, no. I'm never giving up my halo. I'm never gonna hang my head low. I'm never giving up my secrets.
That's Colin Peterick. We're gonna talk to him in just a few minutes here.
He is good.
He comes from a long line of Peterick's, but most importantly, I launched his career and almost got him kicked out. I almost got him kicked out of high school at the exact same time. And Colin, that's right. Is that true?
Sounds like a story.
I was close to getting kicked out. Yes,
yes.
It was all your fault,
and it was almost my fault.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll explain that story.
I remember that story.
We'll explain it. I can't explain it to you.
But you
right
ended
now.
Up graduating. You got your diploma.
Of course.
Everything
I
worked
walked
out.
Down. It was all good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did Ro attend the graduation ceremony?
No,
he did not.
No,
he was banned. Sort of okay. like Uncle Buck.
He's like, keep him away.
Yeah,
yeah. It was quite a moment. Uh-huh. It was, you know, it's a lot. We'll tell the story okay. later. We don't okay. have time for it right now. Richard Roper is here.
Hello. Mm-hmm.
People are going to the movies,
yeah.
and this is an important, this a gigantically important weekend to scare yourself silly.
Yes. Well, you know, it's almost that time. It's mid October. Of course, the stores have been selling Halloween stuff since 4th of July, but it's October, which means it's time for another Halloween movie. This one's called Halloween.
Perfect.
And it is the direct sequel to the first Halloween, which came out in 1978. John Carpenter's classic with a teenage Jamie Lee Curtis as Laurie Strode, Haddonfield, Illinois, which is Roe recently learned is right near where he lives now.
Next door, in fact.
Although in the original film, if you look closely, there are palm trees in Haddonfield because they obviously did not shoot in Illinois and they're limited budget.
I love when they do it. It happens once in a while. They couldn't afford to scrub the
not 1978, yeah. No. But the cool thing is, you know, because after that there was Halloween 2, and then there was Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, and then there was Halloween H2O. At one point, Busta Rhymes was the guy taking on Michael Myers in one of the movies.
I remember that one.
Josh Hartnett showed up as somebody's son. I mean, it just got, you know, a lot of the franchise, it just kind of went off the rails. And they kept killing off Michael Myers, but then the next movie they just show him, like, sewing his head back on. You know, oh, no, he's really still alive.
But what's interesting about this, right, is that it mm-hmm. takes place in real time, 40 years after the original.
Yeah, and what this says is that after the babysitter killings of 1978, Michael Myers was caught and was institutionalized and has been in custody for 40 years. So none of that other stuff happened in real time. So now it's, you know, 2018.
The sequel to the original.
Yes, and Laurie Strode is in her 60s and is a grandmother and is convinced that Michael Myers is still one day going to come out as the boogeyman and escape and come to her. And that pretty much sets off the chain of events. So we're back in the real Halloween timeline is really, really well done. Really gory. And a lot of references to the other Halloween movies in this movie, too. Like, you know, like little nods to previous entries in the franchise.
I'm seeing it.
You got a lot of guts.
I do love them.
You'll see a lot of guts.
Now, let's talk a little bit about that, too, in terms of the bloodiness compared to the first one.
Yeah.
Totally a different take on the gore and the violence, right?
Yes. In fact, there's actually, again, there's like sort of this commentary about the commentary. At one point, one of the teenage kids, the granddaughter's friends, says, "What's the big deal about Michael Myers? He killed 5 people on that night." And sadly, as this kid says, he goes, "That's nothing compared to what we see all the time in our world." So he's kind of, you know, downplaying the fact that, you know, this guy became a legend because it's almost, hate to say it, quaint in, you know, the context of violence these days. So the movie kind of comments on that. Yeah, when you watch the original, it's really well done, but the killings are, you know, spaced out quite a bit, which makes it so much more scary.
It does. The anticipation and the suspense of what's going to happen next.
And the level of violence in these movies has changed over the years
absolutely true.
Well, the code changed, and then the ratings, you know, originally, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis is famously the daughter of Janet Leigh, who from Psycho. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Hitchcock had a ton of trouble getting the shower scene passed through the before the rating system. As a matter of fact, Psycho may be responsible for the rating system because there was such a pushback from Hitchcock and from the studio at the time about how it's subjective it was to decide what it was going to be. The crazy thing about that scene is she never gets stabbed in that scene. You think she's getting stabbed. You never see her
penetrate her skin.
Right. Blood. Yeah. On the shower curtain,
and it become, and in fact, because of that, it made it that much more, you know, of an iconic scene. And and the fact that it was in black and white, so now you're seeing that blood going down the drain. For some reason, it seems even more
You
know,
it was newspaper ink.
Yeah,
is what he used for that.
Amazing,
because it was black and white.
This one is, you know, it's an R-rated film, so you know, some of the kills that Michael Myers execute, you're supposed to kind of, you know, almost laugh. You know, you go, oh my gosh, I can't look. And then you kind of let out that, you know, cathartic laugh or sigh, or people talk back to the screen. Cause they go, oh, man.
That's what I do.
You know?
every
screen
time,
talker.
Yes, every time I go
guilty
to the theater.
Whenever someone's hoisted, you know, off the ground, and then something keeps them pinned to the wall or the fence the ceiling fan, that's always a good, you know, get that shot of the feet dangling.
The most important thing in a movie like this is that you enjoy when they die, because either they, you know, they had some sort of a sin. They either had sex.
In many cases.
Or they enjoyed themselves too much. You know, there's always the people who go in these films, right? Isn't that the point?
Or they're the bully or the mean person.
Yeah, in this case, sometimes it's just somebody that happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. But or it's like the stoner that makes the move on the girl and he shouldn't have done it. And then she runs off and he's like, come back. And he falls and he goes, oh, who's there? Who's there?
Yeah.
It's not the girl coming back.
No.
Mm-mm. Ever.
Hashtag me too. All right, so you give this
3 stars.
That is
solid ranking for Halloween. And yeah, it's going to do big box office. There's such anticipation for this, because for a lot of people, they either watched it as kids, or they watched all the sequels, or they watched it on VHS. So it's got generations of fans now.
Hard to retroactively rate these kinds of things, but Halloween has held up pretty well.
Yes.
You say is in terms of ranking of horror films in that genre.
Of those types of films, it's the best. You know, because when you look at, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street too, you know, the original and a couple of the other ones, you know, because that again was something about, you know, there was something really universal about somebody penetrating your dreams and you dying in your dreams. You know, Friday the 13th is just the you know, the easiest parts of Halloween. It's just a guy in a hockey mask who's a bloody, you know, bludgeoning force. There's not, you know, and everybody goes out to the cabin in the woods. That kind of thing. So I mean, you know, so like when you look at those movies, none of them are really well done. It's pretty easy, you know, to do those, as opposed to, you know, Halloween, where there's mythology, and then we learn about the history of Michael Myers as, you know, as a youngster when he stabs his sister and all that kind of stuff, and the connection. There's a connection between Michael Myers and Laurie Strode. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than just a guy in a mask with a knife.
What else should we see?
We've got Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell and Timothy Chalamet. Mm-hmm. The young actor. That's really good. It's a story of addiction, of a father trying to help his son cope with that. There's also a documentary about Studio 54 we had mentioned. That's pretty good, too. That's just called Studio 54, for people who know the famous nightclub of New York in the 70s.
It's been made in film a number of times.
Mm-hmm. Myers actually played Steve Rebell, but, you know, the co-owner. And if you've ever gone to the clubs, or you like the clubs, or if you're a kid that, you know, you want to see where it all started and was never topped, is Studio 54, because you'd have Bianca Jagger on a white horse while Andy Warhol was in the corner, you know, getting stoned with Mick Jagger and Farrah Fawcett and everybody else.
And,
it was
and Donald Trump standing
Donald
there,
Trump,
too.
Yeah. He was there.
He was big,
famously not drinking, as they always talked about. He'd never drink.
Mm-hmm. Wait, hold on. Do we have a clip of this?
We have a clip of Studio 54?
Oh. Baby, my heart is filled with love and desire for you. It was a time of the 70s.
That doesn't sound very good. There is, and where do people see that?
Oh, that's available. I think it's playing in a couple of theaters, and you can get it online. And it's interesting, too, because Ian Schrager, who was the co-partner with Steve Rebell, who died a long time ago, and Ian Schrager's done a lot of hotels and things even here in Chicago since then.
The public.
He's never really talked about the whole experience at length, and they got him for this documentary, and him looking back and basically saying, wow, we were really cool and stupid, really stupid.
Well,
they went away for 20 months, the two owners. For
right, because they were taxes, because they were collecting cash.
They had three sets of books, apparently.
Yes.
One in the ceiling.
That's not okay.
And and also, Steve Rebell would walk around in the dead of summer, no matter what, in a giant puffy coat filled with cash and drugs. And there's pictures of my different is walking around the club in one of those giant parkas you get when you're going to the North Pole. Everybody else is shirtless because it's so hot in the place. And then he would just, hand out cash or quaaludes, whatever you'd like.
Yeah.
It's madness. Mattresses in the basement for those of you who wanted to take it to the next level. It's just craziness.
Yeah. It will go down, and it still does in this kind of lore of what a fun night. And all I can imagine is maybe after the first two or three, and then after that, it just seems like a gigantic headache. Yeah. And those guys did it for years, and it was, you'd have Pierre Trudeau, who's Justin's dad, in case people are wondering who he is, who was then the premier of Canada, who would be there with
his
Bianca Jagger.
Beautiful wife, Margaret, who then left him and never came back.
Right. And then
she got into the whole scene, and then some, unfortunately, some tragic ends there. And they pretty much invented the velvet rope, because they would get crowds so huge outside of Studio 54. And at the time, that area in Times Square was really dicey. So they had put the velvet rope up to keep the hookers off to the side.
Because they weren't allowed?
But then they decided, wait a minute, we should keep this up because this is a way to decide who we want to let in. Mm-hmm. So there's great footage of the doorman standing on a huge platform pointing at the, don't ever wear that hat again. You should never come back here. Which exists to this day.
Where, right.
You see people, sadly and pathetically, lining up at 1:30 in the morning trying to get into some Chicago club.
I'm getting picked out of line. Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Not paying attention.
No. I was trying to get into a club. Sorry.
I was like when there's a guy going, I got 14 of my buddies. Can we get... You're never getting in with 14 of your buddies. I don't care if they're the Patriots.
I know. Even if you don't know the girl, just tell her to walk in first.
That's the move.
Right. That is... This, so we're just saying Studio 54 is a place that Violetta could not get into, even if she tried hard. Even in its heyday. It was actually open longer than people realize, too. It seems like there's
open, closed. It was funny because the first time around, it was like 3 years. But then it went on for a long time. But they eventually were closed because they didn't actually have a liquor license. So the way they got around that was they'd just have a cater. They'd say, we're going to have this catered tonight. And they'd have a catering license. Finally, after 2.5 years in New York State, authorities were like, you guys got to have a liquor license for having a club with 4,000 people in it.
Yeah.
But Rose, right, then it went on through the 80s, I think.
Yeah, it did.
Different iterations, different
right,
owners.
And I think it was right. It wasn't because at that point, those guys had split up as a team.
Yes.
And then they ended up going to jail later than that, because then they by the time they finally caught up with them legally and the whole deal. It's a great story, but it's also a really sad story, and it's a commentary about the party life, which is always short-lived in each generation. Each generation has a story of a club or a movement or whatever it was, and it always ends in tragedy, heartbreak, imprisonment, early death, and all of that.
Very true.
Like Gia Carangi, the famous model that Angelina Jolie essayed in the movie Gia. She was a regular there. And then the AIDS, it was basically the AIDS epidemic that took the place out. And it was the first place where all of a sudden straight people were like, oh, wait, I can get that?
Well, this is absolutely right, because it opened shortly after the end of the Vietnam War, and we were kind of in that very brief period where it was anything goes before the onset of AIDS. And Steve Rebell, the co-owner, he died at the age of 45 from AIDS. And they show all this newspaper footage, and show all these newsreel footage and newspaper headlines from the time, because even back then, he had enough power, his friends had enough power. It was announced that he died from complications from Hodgkin's, or they'd say pneumonia.
Couldn't even say it.
Right.
The word AIDS was, it existed, but there were not one obituary said that that's what he died of.
About that.
Yeah, exactly. Kaposi sarcoma. And they'd go, I see that was cancer.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It wasn't. It was AIDS. All right. Okay, so you see that. You also, the Steve Carell movie you give.
A Beautiful Boy gives 3 stars. It's a 3-star kind of weekend for these movies.
Okay.
Very different films. So, yeah, don't wander into one thinking you're going to see the other. Because you're like, oh, they're slashing people up in Studio 54. No, that's Halloween.
And to the Halloween, so the teenagers want to go to Halloween this weekend. At what age should you tell parents not to send them?
It's an R-rated movie. So I say the average 7-year-old these days can handle it because they've seen everything
seen it
by
all.
Then.
That's so true.
They've already, mastered Call of Duty 12. So right. It's kind of cute. Oh, look, he's got a hammer.
Well, he must have lost all his powers.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, he needs more credits. All right. thank you, sir.
Exactly.
All right. Stay right here. Let's find out from Kim what's happening at the bottom of the hour.
Rogue President Obama hitting the campaign trail next week.
This week on Chicago's Best, stuffed, grilled, fried, and savory. Nothing humble about any of these sandwiches. Catch an all-new Chicago's Best Sandwiches Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
I like to. I run up and down the halls singing this every other Friday.
Today's the day.
Yeah.
So we'll be seeing that soon.
That was me earlier today, but I wasn't actually singing that version of it. That is actually Colin Peterick who wrote that.
Didn't sound as good, right. For sure.
And Colin's going to be joining us in just a few minutes here. He's got a project called Fever Breaks. And this is, wait to hear this. It's going to play live. It's Live Music Fridays.
Awesome.
So don't anybody move. We got all that going.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need to tell you that we have, earlier today, we spent $2,000 of Lou Canellis' money on the Chicago Bears.
Uh-huh.
And Lou, unfortunately, thinks that the Bears are not going to win that game.
And Lou is usually so optimistic, so it did it troubled me a little bit when he went that way.
Yeah.
There are some who think that they just could do it.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about anything at this moment, but all I know is that I was dismayed by that.
I was too.
And Judy Pilak has got the WGN News, and that's coming your way in 2 minutes. Oh, I see what you're doing there. Colin Peterick, you're channeling like 1976 right there. That's pretty amazing. You're not old enough to be able to do that.
Yeah,
so.
How do you know about the 70s? You're like, what, 30?
Yeah, 29.
Yeah.
That sounded foxy.
Yeah, it was.
Totally.
Very foxy. Very sort of the disco jazz Fern Bar era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Studio 54 or no?
No, not quite. No, that would have been, the beat wasn't right. The BPM wasn't right, but certainly
slow.
That would have definitely made it on Disco DAI.
Nice.
as sort of the slowdown jam right there. This that Colin Peterick is with us, mm-hmm. and he's been with us before. His dad is, you know, the musical director of the Rokon show with Anna DeVlantis.
He's the best
unpaid position. but Colin, now I just want to go back. We got to pay off on this. Colin, I have shared the stage with mm-hmm. since he was 16, I think, or 15.
I was probably 17.
17?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you almost got him kicked out of high school.
And here's what had happened. See, what had happened was we were doing a Christmas show
mm-hmm.
up in Gurnee, and in Waukegan, and at the, you know, the big theater up there.
Sure.
And we and the Ides of March were playing the Christmas show, and there was a little bit of a musical emergency. And you were with a band at that point called like Red Lobster. What was it called?
Lobster Newberg.
Lobster Newberg. That is correct.
Wait, how old were you at this time?
17.
17 years old.
It was a progressive rock band.
Yes.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
So, and they were, it was sort of like the Police. Uh-huh. It was kind of like what they, you know, they were like, they were like a 2000s version of the Police.
Great.
Yeah. And, and it turns out that, and then I started, you know, crediting the band members
mm-hmm.
who were there, and I credit Colin, and then his dad goes, "Shut up!" Oh. He's supposed to be in school.
Luckily, you're just broadcasting over the radio, and no one noticed, right?
Yeah.
Never got asked any questions on that. I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So there was that. So he did graduate, though.
Yeah.
Which was very, very good. And you've gone on now in this last decade and almost a half to become a musical producer, an artist in your own right, and doing all that stuff. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And you've got a recording studio. You produce other people. Specifically, are you doing like the whole pantheon of music for people, or
it's mostly rock and pop, mostly up and coming artists, young artists. I do a lot of artist development for like younger artists or newer artists, and work on them with like song structure and getting songs ready for like radio and getting songs ready to be put online if they're going to do a big marketing push, and just how to optimize a song and just working on lyrics and arrangement, all that sort of stuff.
Does your dad ever interfere with you on that? Does he ever try to tell you
he's
wrong?
Got to, right?
No, only if we're working together on something he has input, but I always welcome his input. And you know, sometimes we butt heads sometimes, but it's all for the better in the end. So yeah.
Styles are so different, though. You said you started progressive rock, and then you slowly got to where you are now.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was in the progressive rock phase, Lobster Newberg, all the bands were King Crimson, Gentle Giant, all that stuff. And then I discovered Steely Dan senior year of high school, and then my direction went like, whoa, that's really cool. So then I started, you know, all the jazz and soul and, you know, blue-eyed soul and stuff like that.
So Cocaine Nights is kind of an OG.
Yeah.
But it's got that 70s production element to it.
I love 1970s production. It's my all-time favorite thing. You know, Boz Scaggs and Steely Dan. It's like my jam right there.
When you stop and you think about how they were able to do that in the 1970s and produce some of those, including like, you know, the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack and all those different records that were in that were on that, both by the Bee Gees and other artists.
Yeah.
The production level of that, and they were doing it on live tape, right? They had, it was actually rolling tape that they were mixing together to create those, you know, the acetates and then the final presses. It's amazing because now digitally you can do that stuff, you know, fairly simply.
Right. I mean, I make mostly everything on my laptop with my keyboard right here and my, you know, my plugins right there. And that's just about it.
It's just an amazing, amazing, amazing artistry that went in. And it was a lot of people that it took to do that stuff. And so and I love the fact that you're paying homage to that sound.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it was just the crappiest music in the history of humanity. But others.
Disco Duck. You didn't like that?
I was a very big fan. Very big fan of Disco Duck. But that's the crazy thing is that. That, you know, now you could do almost anything, and so you could be whatever you want to be, and musical taste is so wide.
It's
because
true.
It's you have you don't just go to the record store and then have to pick from a bin. You know, you look at your phone or you look at whatever you look at your laptop, whatever, you just choose what you want.
Yeah, my music is kind of like people with music ADD. There's kind of something for everyone. There's some hip hop, some alternative rock, indie rock, and pop, and even some disco. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a little bit something for everyone. You'll sort of hear that as we play some
music. Well, let's do it. I'm sick and tired of talking. Let's actually play something that I want to hear. And now, Colin Peterick, you can find this music right now is from this Fever Breaks product, and you can go to FVRBRKS, Fever Breaks, but without the E's in it and the A's.
Yeah,
it's just all consonants.
The vowels removed.
Yeah, that's right. Fever Breaks, no consonants.
Or, on Facebook at Fever Breaks or on Spotify.
With vowels.
With vowels, Fever Breaks. Yeah, not to be confused with, not trying to be confused.
Or you can just, you know what? Everybody wants to give me the URLs of Facebook. Just Google Colin Peterick.
You'll find it.
And you'll find it. It's Colin Peterick. That's how you find him. All right, what do you want to do first?
Let's do this song called Human by Design.
All right.
Closer to me, to the point where spark meets gasoline, and the precious few moments in between. There's many things in life that can't be taught, heartstrings and opinions that can't be bought. Soft voice, deep thoughts make it hard to breathe. And I was on my knees, begging, baby, please. Cause even Mona Lisa leaves a little mystery in the way she smiles. And every day I wake up thinking about your face. In every way I don't deserve you in the first place. Machines, we can't be perfect every time. We are human by design, human by design. In this age of information, take a page from the book of Exodus. Put your hand in the air and make a fist. No rest for the wicked, no salvation. Is it a waste of time? The Chinese believe in the power of rhyme. Between love and sex, a little distance left becomes a mile. And every day I wake up thinking about your face. In every way I don't deserve you in the first place. We are not machines. We are not machines. We can't be perfect every time. We are human by design. Human by design.
Colin Peterick. Wow. He did that.
Man's got talent.
He did that all with his mind right there. It was, if people are watching this on the internet, it is amazing.
And
great.
The lyrics make you think, too. That's the other thing. You sort of like get lost in it. It's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Really awesome.
And you know, the people in the music industry have been trying to work Mona Lisa into every song possible.
That one worked for me.
That is the most unique phrasing of Mona Lisa in the history of... Because Mona Lisa is just it's a good lyric, right? You know, I mean,
right.
It's beautiful.
If you're gonna use a lyric, if you get filler words,
that was one of those lyrics that when you're mumbling through trying to write a song, it just comes out, and then you sort of work it into lyrics to make it make sense. Like after the fact, that's kind of like my my songwriting process is just sort of fill in the gaps. It's like Sudoku, honestly.
Now it makes sense.
Oh my God, it was great though, because the phrasing. I mean, it was like I'm like, all right, now. That's a winner right there.
Exactly.
As good as a hook. That is as good as a hook, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Colin Peterick is with us. It's Live Music Friday. Let's check in right now with Andrea Darlis. What's coming up in the newsroom at the top of the hour?
Roe Jeff Sessions is in Chicago. We'll tell you what he had to say about Chicago police and what Mayor Emanuel said about what he had to say. That's coming up at 7.
Dan Hampton checks in with the Steve Cochran Show Monday morning, 7:10, where he will hopefully be talking about a Bears victory. Go Bears.
Bears.
Oh, God. Patriots.
I don't know.
Tom Brady.
Ah!
In town.
Stop.
Khalil Mack. Questionable.
Andrea Darlis is going to bring you the news at the top of the hour. The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. You've depressed me now. But thank God Colin Peterick is here. He's going to make us feel better.
He will.
He's got a project called Fever Breaks. If you want to download his music, go to where all music is stolen from the internet. That is the way to go. But Facebook, Fever Breaks is the name of this project. Or just Google Colin Peterick, Peterick. I don't know why. Sometimes
you're
do,
adding consonants. I don't know He's taking away vowels.
I know. I can't figure out what's going on. Colin Peterick, P-E-T-E-R-I-K, is how you spell that last name. It's not an unfamiliar name in the world of music. And Colin, C-O-L-I-N. So, this is a young man that I have known for the better part of two decades. Mm-hmm. I've watched him grow up and turn into this amazing artist.
Very
and
impressive.
I just want to thank you for not ever mentioning something bad about me. So, all right, take it away. What do you want to play?
All right, this one is called Body Language.
And you're listening. Yeah, I'm talking. And you're listening. There's no words. There's no sound. But your body is screaming out loud. Physical force, communication from the source. There's nothing like it. There's no rehearsal. 'Cause body language is universal. Talking and you're listening. Yeah, I'm talking and you're listening. There's no words, there's no sound, but your body is screaming out loud. Physical force, communication from the source. There's nothing like it. There's no rehearsal. 'Cause body language is universal. Physical force, communication from the source. There's nothing like it. There's no rehearsal. 'Cause body language is universal. Physical force, communication from the source. There's nothing like it. There's no rehearsal. 'Cause body language is universal. I'm talking, and you're listening. Yeah, I'm talking, and you're listening.